Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and it's Tuesday, and we have two shows for you.
Two for Tuesday.
Two for Tuesday, as they say in the radio biz. Never more true than it is today.
Stay tuned as we get the lead out.
Yeah. Steve, you told a story in the news, and both Wendy and I's eyebrows did that thing where they went way, way, way up in the air because we wanted to hear more. And that's about this...
The new tourism chief in Chicago?
Well, yeah, yeah. Of course.
Okay, I understand.
It's so exciting.
Choose Chicago. It's a big deal. Navy Pier and all that.
The mayor of Moni.
Yeah.
And I can't just say Moni. I always want to say Crete Moni.
You got to.
Moni.
Because they got married several years ago, Crete and Moni. You
like
know
Homewood Flossmoore.
Yeah.
You can't say one without the other.
I know. The mayor of Moni, a man named Jay Farquhar...
Careful.
I was being careful. Got into a fight with an umpire at a youth baseball game. They're not saying Little League game. I don't know what the difference is between a Little League game and a youth baseball game.
This was a baseball league, a Pinto division, so the players were 7 and 8.
Okay. Oh, wow.
That's Little League.
That's Little League, yeah. I would think so. So what do we know, and why isn't there footage of this? I want to see this.
You want to see it on tape,
yes.
On video?
Yes.
It will make me uncomfortable. I can't watch it. Do you know the deets?
I have the story if you don't, Steve.
Okay, well, the deets I have is, well, why don't you go ahead and do it, Bill?
Right,
I think I'd be more comfortable.
Aaron Gallagher of the Chicago Tribune wrote this story, and here's how it goes. An umpire at a youth baseball game claims that the mayor of South Suburban Moni broke his jaw in two places and called him a drunk during a dispute at a game on Saturday. Mayor, and get your finger on the dump button, Wendy, because I may say this incorrectly.
I'm ready.
Mayor Jay Farquhar.
Bless you.
Who was a coach in the game, claims he was trying to defend himself after his sarcastic comment about the ump led to a physical altercation. So he admits, the mayor, Mayor Farquhar, admits that he said something sarcastic and that the umpire came up after him.
Well, I think it was that he called him a drunk.
Right.
Well, welcome to baseball, first of all. This happens all the time.
But you have to be a little more polite if there's little 7 and 8 year old kids there, don't you? It's
yes.
Not like the big leagues where you can yell horrible, horrible things about the players. In a 7 and 8 year old game, you got to be a little bit more careful, I would think.
I got in a fight with an ump once. Actually, with a coach.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Finish this story
well,
and I'll tell you later.
All right.
And there were young kids, but I didn't swear and I didn't accuse anybody of anything other than a very... I'll explain it.
You
Go
shouldn't
ahead.
Even say Farquhar in front of 7 and 8 year old kids. I don't think.
That's Mr. I can't trust myself like you can.
Be careful. Will County Sheriff's Police are investigating the matter and will send the report to the state's attorney's office for review. The altercation occurred in a Moni Baseball League Pinto Division game for 7 and 8 year olds. Now, this is weird because when I played Little League Baseball, the Pinto League was older. It was Pony League, Colt League, Pinto League. Those were older kids. It was Babe Ruth Pony, Pinto Colt. Like, you got into the horse names after you were like 12 and 13 and 14, not 7 and 8.
We just had Little League and then Babe Ruth. That was
That's it.
There was no Pinto, Mustang,
We had
Sally.
Minor, intermediate, major, Babe Ruth, Colt, Pinto, Pony.
Wow.
And then you were just...
In the pros?
You just played professional baseball. A team had to sign you. Your mom would sign you up and then a team would look at your record and they'd go, yeah, all right, I guess we got to take them. The altercation occurred in a Moni Pinto Baseball Division game, 7 and 8 year old kids. As part of his coaching duties, Farquhar was standing near umpire Tim Nelson, who's great, by the way, catching and retrieving pitch balls that the batters missed. Nelson admits that during the game, he knowingly called a foul tip when a batter swung and missed in order to give the batter an extra pitch.
Well, you can't do that.
Yeah, that's...
Sure you do. With 7 and 8 year olds?
No, now somebody's saying Pony League is 7th and 8th grade.
I think it depends on where you are.
Yeah,
I guess,
it must
but...
vary. It must vary a little bit.
But why isn't this Little League then?
It should be Little League. Maybe
that's
it's not sanctioned.
Maybe
Little League knows that this is the Moni area is dangerous. They don't want any in on this. So Nelson admits that during the game he knowingly called a foul tip when a batter swung and missed. So a guy swung at the ball and missed it, but the umpire, to give the kid another chance, goes foul tip. But he knows that.
Well, you don't give a kid another chance. I mean...
I don't think you do either.
Yes, you do.
No,
they're seven and eight.
How do they learn?
And Steve, what if somebody had money on the game and that
right,
alters the outcome?
Silly.
How do they learn?
No,
there's
you
seven.
Don't. Seven is not that little for Little League. When do you start?
I still think, Steve, if a kid swings and misses on strike three, you got to say, take a seat.
Yeah, you don't say, oh, let's give you another one during practice, do it, but
I,
no.
I can see now why Wendy got in a fight. She's really worked
no,
up about this.
Actually, this was the one time in my life, and I've been very loud at every soccer and Little League game. That's why my kids no longer play sports.
Oh, no, really?
No, but I will explain it after the break, but I was sticking up for an ump.
You were?
Yes. And yeah. I went at it with the coach, and he was a jerk to
me. With the coach of your own team?
No, the opposing team.
All right.
But anyway, finish this. But still, you don't. I mean, if he touched it even just a tiny bit, then
you
go
call it
ahead.
A foul tip, but the umpire is admitting, Nelson's admitting, he swung and missed. He's admitting that. This started because I gave a little girl an extra strike. I don't know why in all of our heads we assumed it was a boy, didn't we? But it was a little girl.
So it's a co-ed team?
It must be.
You know what? Some of the girls who played on the co-ed teams with my boys were kick
better
ass.
Right.
They didn't need any special treatment.
I know.
And you know what? He's a terrible ump if he did this.
Right.
Now,
Donald Trump says you can't trust women baseball players. Is that true? I don't think that's true.
That's not true.
This started because I gave a little girl an extra strike, said Nelson of Park Forest. I'm just trying to make sure that the kids have fun. You can't fault them for that.
It's a game.
Damn it. What
does that mean? It's not supposed to be fun.
Right. Wow, unbelievable.
We came here to win.
Listen, as the mother of two not really great Little League athletes, they still had fun. But you got to play by the rules.
Right. But if you're the other team and you see a kid swing and miss, you say to yourself, well, How many strikes does somebody get?
Right.
You
and then you. Exactly.
Right.
Even Steven. Farkin
Burl. Careful.
You big baby, stop crying.
There's no crying in Little League. There had been a number of unusual calls by the umpire, according to a statement that Farquhar gave to Monee Police. I love that the cops, they have to take a statement. They have to, because there's an altercation. But
look, the guy's jaw's broken. So.
I know. It gets serious. Yes. Farquhar gave to the Monee Police that was provided by Farquhar's attorney, Reagan Freetag, who is also a Will County board member. I then asked the ump a sarcastic question about if he was too drunk to know that we are trying to teach kids to play by the rules.
Okay, that was a stupid question, but still.
People always ask umpires if they're blind. You don't.
Right.
It's
not drunk.
It seems out of character to ask them if they're drunk, but blind seems to be is perfectly acceptable for some weird reason.
But come on, the taunting continues in baseball. We want a pitcher, not a
belly itcher. What if there was a pitcher who was a fantastic belly itcher? You wouldn't let him pitch?
What if he had an itch on his belly?
What if Jake Arrieta or Chris Sale happened to be baseball's greatest belly itcher? Are you going to hold them off the mound just for that? I don't think so.
Certainly not.
I don't think so.
You guys, the show started.
Oh, it did start. Nelson said that Farquhar turned his back as he flatly called Nelson a drunk in front of the children. As unmanly as a man can be, he turned away from me and said, "You're nothing but a drunk," Nelson said of the mayor.
Oh, a little defensive.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Nelson said he then reached out to Farquhar's arm to turn him around in order to confront him face to face.
Okay,
once
he touched the guy,
that's
all
where,
bets are off.
I know. Once
that's assault.
Once there's physical contact, you have a problem.
He's nothing but a drunk, allegedly.
Allegedly. Farquhar called that gesture a push and warranted him to defend himself by throwing up my right arm, which made a single contact to his left cheek with my right hand.
Was it an intentional punch to the jaw, or was he just kind of lifting his arm to get that guy's arm off of him and it accidentally hit him in the jaw?
There's such a big difference between trying to remove somebody's hand and taking a cut at him.
Well, no.
But Wendy, from what I hear, it doesn't matter because he deserved it.
No, I never said that. Steve,
stop
putting words in my
mouth.
Steve,
if he had swung at him and missed, would you give him a second chance if he swings and misses?
That is the question of the century.
Would have called it a foul tip.
All right, we have to take a break. I see calls are lining up from drunken umpires all over the country.
That is a great band name.
The Drunken Umpires?
Somebody jump on that.
They were at Lollapalooza last year. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to comment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, if you're just joining us, we're telling you the story about trouble on the diamond there in Monee as the mayor Farquhar, broke the jaw and called an umpire a drunk during a youth baseball game. Your thoughts at 312-981-7200.
All right. Bill is on the line. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good.
I think you guys are so far off with the third strike thing. Let the kid have another chance. And the comment about when are they going to learn? My God, they got 3 or 4 or 5 more years to learn yet. It's supposed to be fun at that time. It's
Why have rules then? Is the other team going to get an extra hit then, an extra at bat?
My God, yes. At 7, 8 years old, what you know that's that same kind of thing. You know, when a kid gets a trophy for participation. Those kids don't think they're going to be all-stars. It's just fun at that age. It is just fun. And I'm guessing that at the 7th, 8th, if the kids are really good, they're going to be on another team where maybe it's more was expected of. But to say the kid, you know, we're not going to give him the umpire calls a foul tip. Maybe the kid hits the ball next time. Maybe he makes an out. But he's so happy that at least he got to hit the ball.
It was a girl, though, and that's my feeling that
should
he's
that
like.
Should that matter, though?
Yes, I bet it said, oh, it's a girl. Let's give her another shot. That's wrong.
Was it a girl batting or a girl had gotten an extra strike earlier? Wasn't it?
The girl who was batting at the time, Steve, got an extra strike. She swung and missed on strike 3, and he let her continue to bat.
Didn't I hear you say that it was a make good for an earlier one, though?
I didn't hear that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No. But can I just say, Bill, you know what? I did you play Little League Baseball when you were a kid? You did, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
So I started at either 6 or 7, I don't remember, and I would have felt I'm overly competitive, but if I was up and swung and missed strike 3 and the umpire said stay in there,
I wouldn't have
stayed in. I would have felt tainted by that. I would have felt like, no, I know the rules of baseball. I can't do that.
What if you're playing basketball and you make a shot and it doesn't go in and they say, okay, we'll just give you the points? It's the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing at all.
Okay, Mr. Chuckles.
But I get your point about the kids are there to have fun, but isn't part of it also learning the rules of the game?
You know, T-ball is for fun. Yeah. That's when you get up there and the games last for 18 hours because sometimes the kids can't even hit it off the tee. When you graduate to the pitcher, you got to, they're 3 strikes, you're out.
Yeah, well, you know, and like I say, so let's carry it backwards then. So do we say it's when they're 6 years old, at 5, at 4? When do you make that decision? At 3 years old? Oh, no, I'm sorry. You know what? You got it. You're done.
Well,
when do you make that distinction about letting a kid enjoy it and have fun? You know, I mean, I'm thinking like in junior high, organized baseball in junior high, you know, hey, it's a game.
Right.
They're in the league, perhaps. They can do it. But my God almighty. You understand what I'm saying.
I know fun is the most important element, and
they're
not pros.
My kids didn't have fun in baseball anyway. Oh. They didn't. I made them do it because I thought it would be good for them to at least experience it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Yeah. All right.
But, Bill, thank you. We get your point. We do.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
I think it is the same as a kid shoots a free throw and he misses and you go, oh, you know what, take another one. Or what if, since it's baseball, what if somebody hits it down the line and it's fouled by an inch? Do you go, well, you know what, it's close enough. Let's play it out. Part of the game is learning what the rules are.
Amen, brother. And Rick, you agree?
I agree to the point that the kids should learn. He's talking about T-ball, brought it up. T-ball's different. Okay, but when you guys, even coaches pitch, I had 3 grandsons playing baseball, 13, 10, and 6. Now, the 6-year-old is in coaches pitch. Again, that's fine. I agree with it. They all bat around, and that's how they do it. Nobody wins or loses. I don't agree with that, but they all bat around and so forth. With the older ones, it's like, you know, you have a foul tip. That's it. You're out. If you miss, you're out. That's it. It's, you know, how do they know if they win or lose? How do they learn that fact if they don't?
And somebody has just texted, Rick, and this is a good point. You might want to jump on this, too. We'll wait for your answer. Where do you draw the line? Why stop at 4 strikes? Why not go 5, 6, 7?
Yeah, stay up till you hit.
Yeah.
Okay.
The rules are 3 balls, 2 strikes are what you're allowed, period.
Okay, so.
And the age group, I said, the other guy was talking about, why don't we start at 3? No, I think if you've got a kid pitching on the mound, look at it this way. The kid threw a strike, the kid missed it. Oh, wait, let's give him another one. Oh, wait a minute. I threw a strike and he missed it. Now I lose.
So you're all right. The rules are the rules. 3 strikes and you're out, okay?
Yeah.
And you've got 2 of them, Steve.
They're 7 and they're 8 years old, which means, you know, most of them are almost 3.5 feet or 4 feet tall.
Right.
Okay, and so the umpire gives someone a 4th strike, as an adult on the field, do you get in a fight over it?
No.
No. And sadly, that's what these kids will remember from this season. They won't remember their record or what their batting average was or anything. They'll remember that Coach Farquhar was wailing on an umpire. That's what they'll remember.
Somebody texted that you're saying it's wrong, but they're loving the way you're saying it.
Mayor?
Farquhar.
Oh. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I agree that the fight never should have happened. But again, you know, it's never come out yet. Was the guy drunk? They don't know.
No. Maybe that's why I got so mad.
But, Rick, I mean, listen, the coach had every right to say, dude, what are you doing? That's the third strike.
Right.
And he shouldn't have called him a drunk. That was wrong.
It was.
Yes,
but
it
then
was
the ump grabbed his arm. That's when it all escalated.
And again, you know, even if he grabbed his arm, there's no excuse just to haul off and wail on a guy.
True.
Even with one punch, you know, you back off, say, hey, back off.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it.
Right.
Even with that.
All right, now I want to see the Zapruder film. Now I want to see the video. Thank you for calling, Rick.
All right, take care.
I played in a, and I hate to use the term celebrity softball game, but they called it a celebrity softball game a couple years ago, and our team was way up, right? It was the Chicago Firemen versus Chicago Policemen, and they had Chicago celebrities also play on the teams. Our team was up by a bunch, and then we get into the dugout in the last inning, and they explain to us that these games end in a tie because they don't want anybody to walk away.
They said that
bad.
To you?
And I'm like, what? And they go, no, this is the way we do it. We always end in a tie, so we're going to let them score six runs, and everybody goes home happy. And everyone did but me.
I wouldn't have liked that either. Jim, we have like 30 seconds here, so go ahead.
Hey, Randy, how are you?
Good.
I got a question for you. It was okay to enforce the rules when it was a boy, but the minute you found out it was a girl, it was okay to give her an extra strike. What's up with that?
I totally said the opposite. I said it is not okay to give an extra strike, regardless of the sex of the kid. But I feel the ump, since it was a girl at bat, oh, let's give her another one. And that's what bugged me, Jim.
Yeah, I'm coaching a co-ed team right now, and I've actually had a person ask, well, why don't you give the girls an extra chance? I'm like,
they don't need it.
What does that teach them?
Nothing. And some of the girls, all the girls on my son's baseball teams were better than most of the boys.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim.
Absolutely. My girls are all good. Bye.
Bye, Jim. Thanks.
All right. So he misheard me.
Yeah. You were saying, hypothetically, was the umpire thinking that because it was a girl up at bat? All right. We need to take a break. Thank you, everybody, for jumping in on this. A break, some news, a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We should let it be known that when we thought the newsroom here at WGN Radio was on fire, Mr. Steve Bertrand was going to go down with the ship.
He's not afraid of anything. Fearless.
Nearer my God to thee, Steve Bertrand.
I have a duty to do, and I take it seriously.
I'm out the door. If something happens...
Wendy was halfway home, Steve, as soon as she heard the first siren. Yep.
Turns out it was Mary Vanderbilt smoking in the bathroom.
We thought maybe Orion pulled the smoke alarm or pulled the fire alarm so he could leave early.
Yeah.
Because he has the longest days. Did you do it, O?
Did not pull the fire alarm. I did not. I'm going down with Steve.
Oh, not me.
And Dave Enna, too. He's up here.
Fearless also.
He didn't flinch either.
Nope.
I really was halfway out the door.
I saw you.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
I got a family.
Earlier, you were saying how we were talking about this mayor in Moni who got into a fight at a kid's Little League game, youth baseball game. And you said that you had also a slight altercation a couple of years ago, huh? What happened?
It was many years ago. Oddly enough, it was the last year my kids played Little League. I think it was Dylan's team, and he didn't play the season afterwards because I'm known to be a little loud occasionally in my life.
Yeah.
Everybody jokes, you can hear me a town over when I'm yelling, go, hit the ball. I get enthusiastic. So in our little league in LaGrange, a lot of times they have high school kids who ump the games.
Yeah, I've seen that, sure.
And there was a girl who was in high school who was umping the game.
Yeah.
And the team we were versing, as my kids always said, they're at bat, they make a hit, they get a hit, and a runner comes in. The girl who's umping calls the runner out.
Yeah, sure.
And he was out.
Yeah.
Well, the coach on the other team starts harassing this young umpire, going, "That kid was completely safe. You are totally wrong." And he's really kind of putting the pressure.
Yeah,
so
right.
She goes, "Okay, all right, well, all right, then he's safe."
Oh.
And I felt bad for her because she was completely getting harassed by this coach, and
yeah.
She gave in to the pressure. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm like, don't argue with the ump, coach.
And this is from the bleachers. You're watching the game,
yeah.
Obviously, behind the fence, right?
I'm like, don't argue with the ump, coach. The runner was out. The call was made. Don't argue. And he goes, "Did I ask you?"
Oh, no.
So then Jimmy Mack goes,
"Trouble.
Don't talk to her like that."
Oh,
and
no.
The coach goes, "Well, tell her to shut her mouth." And I'm like, "Jim, go away.
Oh,
sir,
no.
Listen, I don't care. The call was made. The ump made the call. You're a coach. Act like a coach." He goes, "Do you want to come out here and do this?"
Oh, no.
I said, "Sure. Anyone would be better than you." And I don't remember how it ended. I think I asked to leave by the coach.
Steve, you know?
Well, we did a news story on that, I recall.
No, but I didn't swear.
Right.
I mean, he was really, I felt really bad for the umpire.
Sure.
Boy or girl, the call was made, and the coach was using his adulthood
right.
to sway this young person's decision, and the call was made. What are you teaching the kids there? Do you want to come out here? Tell her to shut her mouth.
Where was Dylan hiding during this?
He was already gone.
Did he leave?
I think so.
You're telling me he didn't play sports again?
No, he didn't. And in fact, the coach, God love him, Jim, who lives down the street,
yeah.
I said, "Yeah, sorry about that." He goes, "Yeah, there was talk." I said, "Well, I don't care. The coach was totally in the wrong." He goes, "Yeah, but, you know, usually the stands stay quiet."
Yeah, sometimes, well.
It was not fair, it was not right, and I didn't swear.
I'm proud of you for that.
Right.
There were little kids around, and I thought it was making a terrible.
That's what John Wilkes Booth said. I did not swear.
Well, Bill says I swear more than anyone's ever met. I know when and when not to.
There was a kid on one of my teams, on the Indians, and his dad got into a fight with either an umpire or a coach or a player or somebody every game. There was never a game. And my friend on the team would just sit in the dugout and just shake his head. There was nothing he could do. But his dad was so fervent about his opinions during the game that he would just get into a fight every single game. I don't remember us ever playing where his dad just didn't go off on somebody.
Well, you bring back a memory here because Dylan's team made it to the playoffs and Dylan refused to go. He just didn't want to go. I'm like, you have to finish the season here.
Right.
And he just didn't want to go. And we got to the bottom of it. He said, "I don't like the outfits."
The outfits?
What? He goes, "I like wearing shorts." I'm like, then wear shorts. I don't care, but I bet it's because of me.
You didn't
it's all
ask
making
him?
Sense.
Did you ask him? You should have asked him. Now it's
too late.
Well,
this was years ago.
Go back to it.
But I really was sticking up for the ump, and I was like, that is not a way a coach should act. Really? Do you want to do it? You want to come out here? I'm like, yeah. He goes, okay, come on. I go, get off the field.
Oh, no.
And then it kind of fizzled out.
Oh, no.
Come on. There's more. Let's tell
us. No, really, that was it. He just said, do you want to come out here? Sure. All right, well, come on. I said, well, get off the field. And then I don't know what, I think somebody grabbed him and somebody put a baseball in my mouth to shut me up.
Oh, no.
It was not right. Sorry if you're a listener now.
Okay.
Yes, that was me.
So looking back on it, all these years later, would you do the same thing?
No, I'd keep my full mouth shut.
Really? Would you?
You know,
really?
It wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
It, you know, made everybody uncomfortable. I would just chalk it up to that is a jerk coach.
Yeah, sometimes that's all you can do. Steve, I told Wendy this. When Kylie was playing volleyball in high school, a lot of times whoever was keeping score was terrible at it. Like they would give in volleyball, you can only score when your team is serving.
Like in ping pong or tennis.
No, in ping pong and tennis, either team can score.
All right, well,
but in volleyball, whoever's serving, that's the team that can get a
yeah.
point. But a lot of times...
Good thing I wasn't keeping score.
All right. Oh, yeah.
A lot of times I would look over and notice that you were keeping score.
Yeah,
and I'd say, this is
going to
be a long afternoon. But I would sit there and I'd say, wait, they just gave a point to the wrong team. And that happened a lot. And sometimes it was the outcome of the game was the team scored because it was the bad scorekeeping. And Terry would sit by me and she'd go, you can't say anything. You just got to let it be.
I would have said something to that. Because you always get somebody's, some player's little sibling who keeps score, and they, they forget in basketball that they switch at the half. Yeah.
No kidding. When my kids were playing park district basketball and they would need a scorekeeper.
Yeah.
No, I can't.
You don't want to do it.
I don't know how to do the clock. I can't.
All it is it's a clicker with two buttons, and you award a point either to the left team or the right team. But sometimes, you know, there'd be a mix-up, and it would cost them points or even a game. And I'd go, oh, somebody's got to do a better job. And Terry would just go, you can't. They don't care.
I'm surprised you didn't say anything. I'm surprised you didn't go elbow a kid out of the way and say, give me the button.
Right.
Give me the clicker.
Right. I know how to operate a clicker.
We had the old-fashioned ones where you would just flip over the number.
Oh, that kind, yeah.
And the kids would, like, flip over, instead of two, they'd flip over 20. Like, come on.
That's so frustrating.
But I did learn, Steve. Thank you for that question. I probably wouldn't say anything now because I would just go, that coach is a jerk. And then I'd get his name and say it on the radio.
Oh, that's better. That's better. All right, a quick break. News. And then Ashley Escada from CNET. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You know what that music means.
Nope.
Really? You haven't figured it out by now?
Not yet, no.
It's a Tech Tuesday, and on the line with us right now, senior editor at CNET TV and host of CNET's Tomorrow Daily. Her name is Ashley Escada. Hello, Miss Ashley.
Hi. How are you guys?
We are really good. It's a Tech Tuesday, and I don't have my notes. I don't know what we're going to talk about.
Let me help you out. There is now a synthetic dog, Ashley.
What?
That's right. What are synthetic dogs?
This is, we covered this yesterday on Tomorrow Daily. Some people on Facebook are a little creeped out by it, but it's actually a good thing. So there's actually a company called Syndaver, and they make synthetic cadavers for training purposes. So instead of medical doctors or med students using human cadavers to, practice surgery, they can actually use these synthetic cadavers.
Oh, my God. Wait. I'm looking at the people cadavers, the synthetic ones.
And they're terrifying, right? They're a little bit creepy.
And Ashley, I'm mad at them because they are taking business away from my company, Abracadaver.
Where you make them appear and disappear?
Yes. Yes.
That would be a great Las Vegas show. I would go see that.
All right. So wait, this is a really fascinating thing. So they're using synthetic dogs so they can operate on them and learn like what it feels like. And
right. So the thing that we don't really think about, but it makes sense and it's unfortunate all at the same time, is that veterinary students have to perform surgery, and so a lot of times they do that on living animals to practice, and it's supervised, and obviously veterinary colleges take great care to make sure to do their best that the animals are not harmed long term. But they have terminal labs and things like that. And so this company feels, well, if we make synthetic cadavers for humans, why not dogs? And why not, give veterinary schools the opportunity to use these synthetic dogs that are that have fat layers and bones and ligaments. And I mean, it's pretty much a really ultra realistic simulation of a dog.
You know, I'm just reading about the Syndaver Labs. It's based out of Tampa, and they were on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And somebody, one of the celebrities said, yes, we're going to give you the money to do the deal. And then they backed out at the last moment.
Uh-oh.
I bet they feel stupid now. Because this is a great idea.
It's a great idea. And what they want to do is they're actually crowdfunding for the dog, for the canine. And they're looking to raise $24 million, which would enable them to build about 1,000 of these. And they want to donate them to veterinary colleges around the world.
Oh, that's a good move.
So because they want, veterinary colleges to be able to use them without having the risk of saying, like, well, we're not really sure if we want to buy them. So they're saying, hey, look, if you guys want to help us out, you want to kick us a little cash to help build these things, and then we're just going to donate them. So it's really cool. Like, we really like this story, and a lot of people talking about it on Facebook. So it's definitely one of those things that we don't really think about that much. But when you do think about it, it does seem like a problem that needs a solution, and it looks like Syndaver is working towards that.
Ashley, we're a little older than you are. Not much, but just a little. So, Bill, I'll ask you this. When you were in high school, did you have to dissect a frog?
A frog.
And did you dissect anything, Ashley?
We did have to dissect frogs.
I had to dissect.
My brother's only a few years younger than me, and he did not.
Oh.
We had to dissect a fetal pig.
Oh, yeah, that came up, too. I remember. I was sick that day. I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I felt really sorry because it was really cute, and it had a little smile on its face. It died in its sleep, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. That's what they told us.
I bet that's what happened.
It was really fun and really interesting. It just really smelled like formaldehyde.
Yeah.
I couldn't get that smell away from me. But I like knowing that we're not going to really be doing real animals in the future.
Right.
That's really
progress.
Cool.
Progress. That's good news.
Bill, you love Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Incredibly.
And you, did they have the golden ticket for reals in life? I know it was in the movie, but did they have it for you to win something?
In a Wonka bar? I don't know that they ever did.
Well, there's something McDonald's is doing a little similar to that, but not here in the States. Correct, Ashley?
Yeah, this is over in Japan.
They get all the fun.
Really. They do get to have all the fun, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's Japan has a new promo, and they are giving away an 18-carat golden chicken McNugget.
What are you going to do with it? Put it on a necklace? Use it as a keychain?
I mean, that would be a pretty great piece of swag. Am I right?
Yeah. 18-carat gold?
And are they hiding it? Like when you order McNuggets, will it just come in your 6 or 9 or 12 pack? How are they doing that?
Fortunately, they won't be slipping it into a box of into a Happy Meal.
Oh, good.
You have to actually follow the company on social media, Toka, the Japan McDonald's account, and then they have this new mascot in Japan that is kind of like a Hamburglar, but mm-hmm. his name's Kaito Nuggets or Phantom Thief Nuggets, the translation. And so you have to try to track where he's going to show up, and then you can hope to win the ultimate grand prize of the golden chicken McNuggets.
Can't you imagine some kid if they did put it in the boxes, oh my God, this one's burned, and just throwing it out. Too hard.
If you break your tooth off on it, you don't realize it's golden. You could actually just melt a little bit of it down and get a new tooth.
Then you get a lawsuit and an 18-karat gold nugget. That would be awesome. Speaking of social media, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg had a bit of an embarrassment.
He did. Even the highest level executives at social media companies in Silicon Valley are subject to account hacks and poor password choices. So those CEOs are just like us. He reused a password a couple of times, and LinkedIn was compromised a while back, and Mark Zuckerberg's Twitter and Pinterest accounts were compromised for a short time recently, last couple days or so. The hackers published his password, which was DADADA, which may be not the safest, most secure
da, da, da.
In the world. Da, da, da.
And, to do, do, do.
A really big sting fan. Yeah,
that
exactly. Maybe just a really big fan. So he apparently reused that password a couple of times. And because of that LinkedIn breach, they were able to get into his other, his Twitter and Pinterest accounts.
Good
but
thing.
Obviously, I mean, he's always on Facebook, right? He's never on Twitter.
Right, sure.
Too bad they couldn't hack into his bank account, because that's where you want to be for Mark Zuckerberg.
No kidding. Let's hope that he did not password protect his safety deposit boxes with DADADA.
And then, Ashley, one more story. T-Mobile's doing something interesting, I guess, to kind of reward or buy customers' loyalty. What are they doing?
This is really fascinating. So T-Mobile held their Un-Carrier 11 event. They have repeatedly done things to try to shift the mobile, the wireless industry, and in some cases they've certainly done that. In this instance, they are now turning to the customers and saying, hey, thanks for sticking with us. We want to reward you. We want you to have a stake in our future, literally. So we are going to give you one share of stock. And if you bring in fresh accounts from friends or family, we'll give you additional shares.
Do you know the approximate value? Where is their stock at right now? Do you know?
I believe right now it's around $40.
No, that's not bad.
Between $40 and $50, yeah. So so everybody gets one share of T-Mobile stock if they're a customer. They're also doing... maybe that's where Mark Zuckerberg is. They're also doing a thing called T-Mobile Tuesdays, which I guess is an app for iOS and Android. You're able to sign up. And then every Tuesday, they're doing things like giving away, if you're a T-Mobile customer, pizzas or movie tickets. This week is a big Warcraft week, because Warcraft, the movie, is coming out later this week. So T-Mobile's partnered up with them to give away movie tickets. And also bigger prizes that go to one specific person at random, like a battle axe from the movie, things like that. So pretty interesting that they're doing this. It's sort of a kind of a street goes both ways thing. They're rewarding old customers, and then they're also trying to bring in new customers who want those rewards. But there is a catch. Here's the thing. If you have never held stock before, this could create some new challenges for you during tax season next year.
Maybe.
So it'll be really interesting to see how this sort of plays out over the course of a year. I'm really curious to see how a lot of people who are T-Mobile customers are likely not stockholders in any company. So they'll be first-time stockholders, and it'll be very interesting to see how they respond and how they deal with having that stock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am going to go check out Tomorrow Daily and look at the synthetic dog. And listeners, you can too. You can go to CNET. Is it at CNET TV, CNET.com? Which one?
You can go to CNET.com. And then if you want a direct link right to our show page, it's just TomorrowDaily.com.
Perfect. Ashley Esqueda, thank you so much on this Tech Tuesday.
Thank you. Have a good day, guys.
You too, Ashley. Thanks. All right, a quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Who doesn't like to eat? Can you answer me that?
Wendy, I eat nearly every day. Sometimes I'll eat twice a day.
We are going to talk eating and food because that's what we all do. We all have to do it. And Michael Pollan is on the line with us. The Omnivore's Dilemma, Natural History of Four Meals. This is the 10th anniversary edition with a new foreword by you, correct, Michael?
Yes. Yes. Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
All right. So explain this to what you do with this thing. You visit a cornfield. You're talking about a sustainable farm in Virginia. You buy a steer bound for the meat aisle and traces a bag of pre-washed organic greens to California. Now, we all eat without thinking about what we're eating. Is that the point of this book?
Well, that is the point, yeah. I mean, you know, most of us don't give a thought or didn't used to give a thought to how was that meat produced in our hamburger, and where do those French fries come from? But beginning about, 15 years ago, people became curious. We'd had these food safety problems. People were getting sick from eating fast food, and there was mad cow disease. And suddenly we began taking this look at the food system. And for me, I realized early in the 2000s that I didn't know how my food was being produced, and I got curious. And so the book is really a series of detective stories tracing very common meals, like a McDonald's meal, back to the source. And what I found was astounding and upsetting in some ways, but I also found some very encouraging things as well.
Why did you decide to trace McDonald's, Michael? Most of your food is a little bit more on the higher end, but why McDonald's? Why would you go that route?
Well, at the time, I was eating McDonald's food. My son was a big fast food eater, and so we spent time in McDonald's. So I started to wonder, how do they make those burgers so cheap? How do you sell a burger for a buck? And the sodas, and what are the sodas made of? Where's the sweetener come from? And the stunning thing about the McDonald's meal, and this goes for any fast food meal, is that you keep finding yourself as you go back to the farm on the same farm. It's a cornfield, and that corn is the basis of that industrial food chain. So that all those weird ingredients besides the chicken and the chicken nugget are corn-based. The sweetener in the soda is high fructose corn syrup. And all the meat is corn-fed meat. So in a way, it looks like a lot of different foods, but it's all one food. It's corn. And that was kind of shocking to me. I didn't realize that the foundation of our whole food industrial food system was so narrow.
And, you know, like there's some Mirai corn that we get brought to the station, and I pick it up at farmers markets. Other than that, I don't even really like corn. So it's weird that almost everything I eat or drink contains corn.
Well, the kind of corn we're eating is not sweet corn, and it's number two field corn, which if you've ever tried it, and I did, and you've got plenty of cornfields near you in Chicago,
yeah.
It's not edible. It's hard and it's starchy, and it really is an industrial raw material, not actually a food. Nobody eats it. You know, you can grind it into cornmeal and make corn chips or tortillas, but aside from that, it's got to pass through an animal or a factory to be turned into food.
Okay, that's a lovely thought. I'm kind of scared to read your book. I was picking it up and looking through it, and I thought, we're at that age with younger kids and the value meal, so we're hitting McDonald's a lot. Scared to go to Chipotle now, quite honestly, because all the problems they've had, and I don't know if they're ever going to be able to rebound from that.
Yeah, it's very sad to see what happened in Chipotle, especially because they were making an effort to source their meat in a more sustainable way, and they were supporting a lot of local farmers. We still don't know exactly what happened. It may be, though, that if you're going to actually cook fresh food on site, which they tried to do, and very few fast food companies do, then you've got to pay a living wage so you can have workers who can be well-trained and stick around for a while. I mean, maybe that was the problem. But we don't know for sure.
Right.
It's hard to make conclusions. And I don't want to speculate, although I just did.
Oh. But,
that's right. What we do every day.
But, you know, I mean, it's people are afraid to eat now, and I think that that's really a shame because we do have really good alternatives out there. I mean, one of the things that's happened in the last 10 years is we've had this explosive growth in what I think of as the alternative food economy. We're starting to have fast food chains that are, you know, that have healthy, sustainable food, and we'll see more of those in the next few years. Farmers markets are in now 8,000. There are 8,000 of them. In the supermarket, you can find grass-fed beef and pastured eggs and chicken. You know, we shouldn't be afraid to eat. We should just make an effort to find better food, especially if we have young kids, by the way. That's
yeah,
what matters
I know.
Most, because their bodies are being built and they're more susceptible to the impact of pesticides than we are. And, you know, we're already loaded with these things, but kids still, their brain development is happening and their hormonal development is happening. So it's a time. That's when the investment in things like organic food pay off the most, I think, with young children.
Michael, you mentioned that there are now more fast food alternatives to the old standbys. Are you familiar with a chain called Life Kitchen at all?
You know, I've heard of it, and I've never eaten at one. I've heard good things about it, though.
Is that
in Chicago?
Yeah, we have them here in Chicago now, fairly recently, over the last, I guess, year and a half or 2 years. But this was an executive at one of the other fast food companies who said straight out, and I met him. He said he felt guilty. He said he worked at another fast food place, and after years and years of selling product that he himself considered substandard, he said, I need to do something in the opposite direction. So now he has these, and he said it's exactly what you said, a healthier alternative to fast food.
And I think we're going to see more of those. I've just been living in Boston, Cambridge area for the year, and there's a chain called Clover there that does, you know, very healthy food. And there's Amy's, you know, who make the frozen burritos and pizza.
Yeah.
They've started a fast food concept in Northern California. There's no reason we couldn't do it. It has special challenges. Obviously, you need a more trained workforce, and sourcing sustainable food is more expensive and more challenging. But it seems to me that if the consumer wants it, and it is increasingly clear that the consumer is looking for an alternative, food that they can feel good about feeding to their kids, American industry and ingenuity will supply it.
I feel bad saying this, but, you know, we go grocery shopping once a week. Sometimes we add some supplements a couple times during the week. But when you go get the fresh, good stuff like berries, I love berries. So the blueberries, the strawberries, you can find them on sale, but it's really expensive. And a lot of these fast food places, when you're working late and you're running home to get something, it's cheap and it's fast. And I feel if we had good food that was cheap and fast, we'd all make better decisions.
I think that that's true. And I think that we've also been lulled into this state where we expect food to be dirt cheap. I mean, you know, we're happy to spend it on. I mean, look what we spend money on now. We now have another, like, $150 phone bill we never had. We now pay $150 a month for television. All this stuff. Television used to be free.
Yeah.
And
water. You're paying for
to...
water in your home now. That never. When I was a kid, no one paid for water in their house.
why are we willing to pony up for these things, but we still feel entitled to food that can only be produced in the least sustainable way to hit the price target we're insisting? I mean, I actually think those of us who can afford to spend more money on food should try to, because the system that makes it cheap is not a pretty one, and it involves a lot of exploitation, both of workers and animals, and not to mention all the cost to the environment. So I make an effort, and I know I get caught up. My wife is always, I'm complaining about the prices at the farmer's market, and she comes back with one of my food rules, which is pay more, eat less.
Not a bad rule.
It's a great rule. Michael Pollan on the line with us, The Omnivore's Dilemma. It's the 10th anniversary edition. You can pick it up where better books are sold. You can get it on Amazon. And you can also, you're on Netflix with your Cooked documentary series, correct?
Yeah, I've got a series on about my most recent book, Cooked, which is looking at the whole role of cooking in this situation. I mean, one of the reasons that we've industrialized our agriculture is because we were outsourcing cooking to McDonald's and Burger King and all these companies. And when they start doing the cooking for us, they support a very different kind of agriculture than we do. And so I make the case that a revival of home cooking was the best thing you could do for the environment, but also for your health. You know, the best predictor of a healthy diet is not income level, as you might think. It's whether it was cooked by a human being.
You know, it's so true, resorting to junk food frequently. Even if you cook a hamburger at home and make a salad with it, it's completely different and healthier to do that than go run out and grab it from a drive-thru.
It's right. Tastier. You know,
it is really better.
If you're a really terrible cook, it's going to taste a lot better because you're going to use higher quality meat than they do, without question. I mean, when we cook at home, you know, we buy the best quality ingredients we can afford, and we tend to cook them pretty simply because we don't have a lot of time. And that is the essence of a healthy diet.
Michael, most grocery stores in the produce section have an organic section. Is that worth it? Sometimes you pay twice as much for an organic fruit or vegetable. Is it worth it or not?
In my view, most of the time it is worth it. It depends, obviously, on your, you know, can you afford it? But it does mean that the food is grown with, it will have less pesticide residue in it. It was grown in a way that treated the land better and that the workers were not exposed to, you know, toxic chemicals. But if you have young kids, keeping those pesticides out of their diet, I think, is a very high priority. And if you're a nursing mother, you know, the baby's blood-brain barrier doesn't really kick in till 6 months old. So any chemicals that you're eating are ending up in your baby's brain. And so there is a period at which I think organic food is very important. For the rest of us, some foods are produced with a lot of pesticide, and buying organic makes sense. I'm thinking of strawberries and apples and peaches and things like that. Other foods, like bananas, for example, which you peel, it doesn't matter as much. You're not going to get as much of that pesticide. So there's, if you go online and look for the Dirty Dozen list, it'll tell you which are the 12 organic foods that are the best value, because if you don't get organic, you're going to be exposed to a lot of pesticide.
And I'm thinking about just all the strawberries I just washed the other day. You rinse them off in a colander, and that's it. You're not really scrubbing them, so you're not really getting a lot of that pesticide off of them.
No, probably not. I mean, it's better than nothing. And obviously, you're not going to peel a strawberry. You know, that's when I buy organic, when I buy strawberries. And frankly, organic strawberries are not that much more. I mean, they can grow them pretty efficiently in California now. They figured out how to do it. So I do spend more money on organic. But the reasons are not just about my health. I mean, it's really the environmental case for organic is very strong. Healthy soils, you know, are really important. I just want to support those values when I can. You know, we have this wonderful opportunity. We get to vote with our forks 3 times a day. And let's vote for the food system we want to see. And millions of people are doing that. And that's what's thrilling about the last 10 years is to see the growth in the number of people conscious about their food choices. And I'm telling you, the industry is hearing it, and they're beginning to move.
Michael Pollan is his name. You have officially made me feel guilty. The Omnivore's Dilemma, I will be reading it because when I was pregnant, when I was breastfeeding, I was so careful with every tiny thing I put in my mouth. When my babies were little, I was really good at that, and now I don't care anymore. So
Wendy was eating plastic before we started talking to you, Michael.
Well, I hope the book inspires
it. Will.
It makes you feel guilty.
You already have. Thanks for that, Michael. We appreciate it. Michael Pollan, The Omnivore's Dilemma, and check out Cooked on Netflix. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Take care, Michael. All right, we need to take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Strawberries.
Yes.
We were just talking about this off the air. Michael Pollan, the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Yes.
I just wanted to hit the post.
Sure, you did well.
Thank you. He's really guilted me into paying more attention. I was talking to you about strawberries. I should get organic ones because you don't wash them very well. You don't
want a quick rinse, right?
That's really all anybody does. You don't.
Although, don't they make something called a food wash? And I've heard about it, but
there's
I don't know.
There's a spray.
Yeah.
And there's but I don't know what's in it.
Yeah.
And then there's a veggie brush, but you don't want to bruise the gentle skin of the strawberry.
Right.
But strawberries have a problem these days, whether they're organic or regular.
Yeah.
I don't know what the opposite of organic is. Non-organic.
Non-organic.
All right. They are in these plastic containers. When you and I were growing up, there was a sea foam green little square container.
Right.
And blueberries used to come in it. You can still get them at a farmer's market like that.
Yeah.
And strawberries used to be in it. And
you couldn't recycle those, right?
So yeah, it was like cardboard.
Right.
You could recycle that.
Yeah, but it's not really cardboard. I don't know what the material is called, but I think the reason they stopped making it was non-recyclable.
Well, there were little baskets too. I remember those.
Sure.
The little plastic baskets, but this is like a little cardboard thing.
Yeah.
And now they're in this clear plastic that can be recycled, but how many packages of strawberries do you have to pick up to look for the mold bomb in
sure.
the middle of it?
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but
they're not getting to
the
breathe.
Shelf life is a lot shorter than it used to be.
Yeah, because you'll see them, and I feel bad, like when Jewel or Mariano's has them on sale, $2.88 for a giant container, a pound of them, I guess. I must look through 10 things.
Right.
And there are mold bombs in at least 3 out of the 10 I look at.
You got to spray them with that Foggy Mold. Try that. See what happens.
You always have the answer, don't you?
It'll taint the flavor of the strawberries a little bit, but it'll get rid of the mold. No, I know what you mean. Now, other things like blackberries are in, well, they, you know, when you get blackberries, sadly, you're getting a much smaller container usually.
You get 3.
But you can send it for $8.
I know.
That seems fair. Doesn't it? I love blackberries.
I do
but
too.
The containers are small, but you could that one's easy to just flip over and see if you're in good shape.
But it is like a flat version of the blueberry container. The blueberries, the strawberry giant, then the blueberries are mid, and then the blackberries are tiny.
So small. No one in the world has ever said, you know what, I couldn't eat another blackberry. I'm so full. Please, I've already had 2.
You know what though, Bill? They put on the back of it. On the underneath side, when you flip it to see if there's mold in there, there's a little like sweat rag for the berries.
Yep.
They got to lose that.
Right. I'm not sure what
is it a cushion? Is it a little blanket so they don't get bruised in the process of shipping?
I don't know.
But that's
that issue with raspberries too.
Yes, because you can't
raspberries
see.
Mold more even than blackberries
very quickly.
Very quick.
Raspberries are the quickest,
and we have a lot of raspberry lovers in my house. So I've taken a lot. Of moldy raspberries back to the grocery.
Yep.
And you should take them back because nothing gets my goat more.
Has something got your goat?
But that back portion, you know what I'm talking about, Kim. You can't see if it's moldy when you flip it over. Why can't they just remove the little cushion blanket?
That would be better.
They don't need cushioning.
No, they're blackberries and raspberries. They don't care. Come on.
They're trying to sell you moldy berries.
I think they are. There's something to that. All right, we need to take
just eat them moldy.
No, don't do that.
Penicillin.
That's your goat's name. Where's my goat, Penicillin? All right, we need to take a break. And then Kim has the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder and the executive producer for the Midwest Independent Film Fest. What? Executive. What did I say? It says producer. Kevin, talk on the air.
That's your producer's fault.
Oh, okay. Well, because you're a producer. All right. I just, all I wanted to say was I'm sure Mike McNamara loves it when I say our monthly friend is here.
I'm here. I'm happy to. You know, I feel honored to be. Am I your only monthly friend?
No.
Oh, come on. Really?
Well, yes, now, because I am in menopause.
Don't encourage this, Mike. Please don't encourage this. Mike runs the Independent Film Festival, and he joins us every Tuesday. And this
first Tuesday. Every first Tuesday. We don't want to scare people.
Kenneth Yoder is here, who plays the bad guy, the antagonist, in, I think, of all the films you've brought us, this is the greatest title. My Friend's Rubber Ducky is the title of this film. Both of you, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. What's this movie about?
This one's, and I'll turn it over to Kenneth, but this is, I've been literally waiting for a year to show, for us to premiere this film. This is all Chicago made. It's a low budget film with really high budget producers and directors and actors in it. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. It's 70 minutes. It's a lot of fun. And, it's got this guy in it.
Hey guys, thanks for
having me. Hi Kenneth, how are you?
Well, thank you.
All right, how did your involvement with this happen? What happened?
Well, I did a web series and the director saw it and thought I was pretty silly in it and had a, you know, good, he thought I was the perfect jerk.
That is a compliment.
Which is always a weird thing. He's like, hey man, I got a perfect role for you. I need a real creepy, kind of jerky, someone that people are going to hate immediately. You're my guy. So yeah, I came on board. And the movie's basically a stoner comedy, kind of updated, not so political and silly. It's more just kind of chill, like mellow chill, high, you know, like high flying movie.
So grab some Doritos and some Powerade and enjoy.
That's exactly right.
And I will. What's cool about it is I am not a stoner. I don't smoke, and I laughed my ass off and loved the comedy. So, and that was one. That's when I knew I loved this comedy. Is I watched it and I'm like, wow. I really usually veer away from stoner comedies, and I thought this one was hilarious and I loved it.
Good.
So, and then I also thought, hey, if I did smoke once in a while, this would be even better.
This is the one. Yeah.
Kenneth, what was your web series that you did?
Rodrigo Quintez, Quality Children's Entertainer, which Mike has a wonderful role in.
I have a little spot in that too, yeah.
Because I want to see where this jerkness began.
Yeah.
So I'm going to check that out as well.
Oh, I'd love it, yeah.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, Rodrigo Quintez. You will, or Quintez. Maybe. Yeah. I think it's... It's absolutely hilarious. And yeah, he plays kind of what? You're kind of the bad guy in this a little bit.
It's like if Scarface was a quality children's entertainer.
What separates a quality children's entertainer from just a children's entertainer?
Just pure marketing genius.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
It
does. Barney the Dinosaur is not quality children's entertainment.
Nope.
Mike, whimsical.
You said at the beginning you've waited about a year to be able to show this movie, My Friend's Rubber Ducky, at the Independent Film Fest. Why did you wait a year?
Well, you know, since we're, you know, one of the producers is a guy named PJ Fishwick. He's the executive producer on that series Teachers that was a really successful web series and is now on TV Land. Dana Scott's on, is one of the producers on it, and she's working on Exorcist, that new TV series that's coming here with Gina Davis. So,
wait, are
I've
they filming that here?
My understanding is they're filming it here.
Know that.
So, yeah, they filmed the pilot here, and my understanding is that it's shooting here. It
Great.
Hasn't been signed, sealed, and delivered, but that's my understanding.
Good.
Claire Connolly.
Yeah, Claire Connolly, who she had a film called Dig Two Graves that we met with director. You loved that.
Yeah.
You guys got to see that.
Yeah.
So, one of the cool things about Midwest Independent Film Festival, about the Chicago film community, is we all know each other. We're all working together. So, I knew that this film was coming together about a year and a half ago, and I got to see a screener of it about a year ago before it was, you know, as they were just kind of starting to see where they wanted to put it in terms of festivals and everything. So, you know, I told them about a year ago, like, we would love to host the Chicago premiere and let's keep in touch on it. And, yeah, even with this jerk Kenneth in it, I was like, we'll still premiere it. So, no, but yeah, so, and you know, I always say it's so much harder to make people laugh than it is to make them cry. It's really hard. And Bill knows, the stand-up comedian. It's
harder really
to make people laugh. And this one, you know, it's summertime. Come out, laugh your ass off, have a couple beverages. Landmark Center Cinema, 6 o'clock.
Good.
All right, Kenneth, I have a question for you. Mike, you said that this is a low budget. It doesn't look like it, first of all.
That's a tribute to, you know, those producers that I mentioned.
Yes.
That, and Kenneth as well he's working on Sense8 right now, that Wachowski brothers series. All the people working on it are high budget, you know, filmmakers that are working. This is that side project that they did.
And that's what I'm asking you, Kenneth, is the money's not there. You're not doing this to make $1 million. You're doing it because, did you love the role? Did you love the story?
Yeah, you know, it's started with loving the people first, the people that were doing it. So you hop on board because you just want to be a part of what they're doing, you know, and you're like, oh, you guys are going to kill it, even though you don't have money. And the script, you know, credit to director Josh Hyde that the script was awesome. Like, and it's especially sometimes for a comedy, sometimes you'll see a script and you're like, okay, I get how this will be funny once you add some improvisers and mess around, but it was funny on the page. So, you know, that's not easy to do. So I was totally on board.
Does it bother you when Mike McNamara takes a picture of the back of your head while you're talking?
It's you know,
just another day with me and Kenneth.
I think it's an OCD tick of yours. You do it all the time. Every time I hang around, like, there goes
everything.
There he goes.
Usually it's video, though. Usually it's video.
But I know when they started the production, the very, very pre-production of the movie, they approached Lee Jones and Ian Kaiser, who have the kind of a micro-budget business sort of model for doing low-budget
film
films.
Fund kinda.
Film fund kind of thing. And they were on board. And, you know, I've certainly wanted to do a movie, you know, of Lee's for a long time as well. So, like, just the people were right, and the script was tight, and I was in.
It looks so funny.
Since it's been branded a stoner comedy, quote-unquote, I've always wondered this. When they make movies like Half-Baked or any of the Cheech and Chong movies or other, quote-unquote, stoner comedies, are people doped up while they're making the movie, while they're writing it, while they're shooting it, while they're editing it? When are they and when aren't they?
Well, filmmakers in general, you know, probably a steady state of...
Really?
No, I can't speak to that. But for the movie, I do know that we were very, you know, like there was a lot of smoking going on, but it was herbal cigarettes they used. You know, they had a prop house they bought them from and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they're not known to taste very well. So it was very kind of hard on everybody to, and I know Cry Me a River or whatever, but trying to smoke all these herbal cigarettes hour after hour after hour for 10, 12 hours a day, because we are always smoking in the movie. You know?
Oh, yeah. All right.
But it's herbal.
That's a great question, actually.
Yeah. It's herbal.
I don't know the answer. I mean, I know a lot more now, but I always wondered when they're making those movies.
You mean when they're... Because it looks like you're smoking weed the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And it's the herbal.
Right.
Because that's what I wondered. Because for a long time, was it really alcohol that was in...
No, they go out of their way to just find liquids that are the colors of whatever alcohol. Like on Cheers, no one's drinking beer, you know,
totally.
It's no alcohol beer. So I didn't know how that would stand with you guys.
Same thing.
The cool thing about this film, though, along the lines of what you're saying, where you're smoking all the time, there is also, I think what separates this from the pack is that there is like a plot line and a thread, even though it's kind of a kooky,
what's
fun.
What's that doing in there?
Right. So it's not people just kind of sitting around being like, wow, the lights are flickering or whatever potheads do. Basically, the good guy in the film, a college buddy of his, borrowed $5,000 from him and never gave it back.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's broke. He's like, I got to get that $5,000 back. He's like, you know what? That guy probably doesn't even remember it. Maybe I'll reach. And it turns out that he does remember it, and he purposefully was like, you're not getting that $5,000
back. Well, that's mean.
And so it turns into this caper flick.
That's you being
mean. That's Kenneth. Kenneth is the bad guy that stole the $5,000. But what's great is, so then they kidnap the guy. And to get the five, what's great is it's $5,000 that you're trying to get back.
Right.
And literally I'm watching it like, man, if I needed to get $5,000 back from somebody, this is kind of how I'd try and go about doing it. I mean, do you know what I mean? So it's kind of great because they, you know, they don't have any weapons, no guns. I mean, they're kind of like,
it's Keystone Cops.
It's Keystone Cops a little bit. They're you know, they've got them locked up in their closet, you know, and they're just standing by the closet, you know, and what's cool is then you see the relationships between the four of these folks kind of evolve. So, and I won't go any more than that, but it's really cool.
Well, it's low stakes comedy, that, you know, eventually becomes, you know, Stockholm Syndrome vibe becomes a relationship based comedy, which is I think the best kind, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So you get to know everybody, and everybody has, you know, they get to know each other and love each other. It's great.
RubberDuckyFilm.com, and that's how you find out about it. But go to MidwestFilm.com, and Mike McNamara, executive director of the Midwest Independent Film Fest.
You're Can I do giving a quick away, cop yes. offer? Sure. We'll just say this. We love to do this whenever we have the tickets, and we have just a few tickets left. The first 10 people that message us on Facebook, Midwest Independent Film Festival's Facebook, mention Bill and Wendy, and we'll have comps for you and a guest. Just message us on the Facebook page for Midwest Independent Film Festival, and we'll be sure to – you can consider it confirmed, but we'll message you right back.
Very nice.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Kenneth Yoder, for being a nice jerk.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having us. It's also kind of a schmuck.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
good luck
guys.
Tonight. So much. It's going to be fun.
Quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bill.
Yes.
Stephanie Menendez, our former producer, who's now one of the big wigs here.
Well, she left. Middle wig. Under a reign of scandal. You know that. She was our producer, and then there was a scandal that we're not allowed to talk about, but she left.
Did it involve water?
Yes,
that's what, how she pronounces water.
She's from the South, and she says water a little differently.
I was looking at Facebook last night, and I noticed a bizarre type of Oreo that was in someone's Facebook feed, and I didn't even have to look who it was. It was Stephanie, because she falls for all these gimmicks.
Except this one's a good one. Oreo comes out with special edition flavors once or twice a year. And I have to say, with mixed results, some of them are very, very disappointing.
They've done what? Peanut butter?
They've done, at Christmas a couple of years ago, I was very excited about the gingerbread. Ugh. And then once I tried it, I was extremely disappointed in it.
Doesn't even sound good. They bastardized an Oreo, in my opinion.
Right. Well, this new flavor, and I don't know how new it is. She just brought it in today.
Limited edition.
Limited edition.
She said they're already off the shelves at Target.
Is that how fast they came and went?
I think so.
Key lime pie flavored. So you have key lime pie flavored stuff in the middle, and then the cookie itself has kind of a graham cracker finish to it, a graham cracker cookie.
It was pretty good.
It was really good.
She brought four.
It was very good.
One for each of us.
Right.
It's the first time in my life I've ever eaten one Oreo.
This was so good. You didn't even have to do the thing where you unhinged it and ate the stuff and then the cookie. You just ate it as one entity, and it worked.
It did work. It's graham flavored cookie, key lime flavor, cream, artificially flavored. I know that.
Why wouldn't they just put real lime in it? Why is it processed lime flavor? Everything is like it's graham cracker flavored and it's lime flavored. Just make it the flavor.
I don't know the answer to that.
It costs an extra penny, but do it.
I don't even know if it's that. It's just it won't last. I mean, there might be real lime juice, like a drop in a whole vat.
Right. It's not enough for me. I wanted to. No, and it was really good, even though it was artificial. Can you imagine how good it would be if it was natural?
Oh, yeah.
It would be even better.
But here's someone who does not eat great food, which, you know, Michael Pollan has really guilted me into paying more attention now. Mm-hmm. This was good. Mm-hmm. The key lime pie, artificially flavored Oreo,
mm-hmm.
but this is the first time a cookie has tasted completely artificial to me.
Is that right? What did it taste like? It didn't taste like lime?
It just tasted like chemicals.
Oh.
It tasted like Lemon Pledge or
now
off
that's one
bug
of the,
spray.
They, last year they had the Lemon Pledge and off flavored Oreos and they did not sell well.
Better than the birthday cake one.
I thought it was still better than the birthday cake flavor, but I would have thought the Lemon Pledge would have sold like crazy, and it did not. The off sold a little bit better.
It didn't taste like chemical-y to you?
No.
I know somebody's going to call and say, what does a regular Oreo taste like? Just right. Sweet goodness.
Right.
This left like an artificially aftertaste in my mind. It was still really good,
and I would partake
in these again.
You can't. They're gone. That's
limited edition means one day?
One bag. You have the only bag in front of you. That's it. They're gone.
Well, give them a try if you find them out there because they're a hot commodity. They really were good, but they just, I don't know if the aftertaste, something tasted chemically.
Sometimes with the Oreo special editions, they're only available at one specific store because we talked about, I'm trying to remember what flavor we talked about 2 years ago, and I couldn't find them anywhere. And then people texted in and said, no, you have to get them at like Rite Aid or something. I don't remember where it was, but only one store was selling them.
All right, really quickly here. This is Kathy. You work for Nabisco?
I do. And I have to tell you, there's a new Oreo out. It's Fruity Crisp, and it tastes just like Fruity Pebbles.
That might be, forgive me because I know you work for them, but that might be a tad too sweet.
It tastes just like the cereal.
Is it pretty good? It tastes like Fruity Pebbles?
It does. Actually, Nabisco comes out with all kinds of different varieties. There's a s'mores Oreo out there right now.
Well, that sounds good.
Oh, now that sounds good.
That sounds very good.
I like the Oreo.
just a plain Oreo.
It is, I mean, it was that's
Kathy,
what
you said
it,
without talking. You sounded disappointed in Wendy, like, please make those in our sleep.
But that is magical, that combination. And I've actually crossed over to the double stuff side.
Yeah.
At first, I thought the double stuff had too much cream in it.
Yeah.
The cream to wafer ratio was not correct. But I like Oreos. But I will admit, the key lime pie Oreo was pretty tasty.
Yeah. The sardine ones were terrible last year, Kathy. We didn't like those at all.
Thank you. We'll look.
Don't worry, that'll be next.
We'll look for the fruity crisp if that is your specialty at this time. How often? How long do these limited varieties last?
Not long. Not long.
Like a couple weeks.
They're specific, and you are correct. Specific stores get certain varieties, and then they're gone. You know, they get a limited edition of them, and once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, the sardine ones you could only get at J. Jill. That was weird. Why would they have them there?
Why do you know J. Jill?
I'm married.
Isn't that scary, Kathy?
I'm married.
Thank you very much.
That's the part that should scare you. Thanks,
that
Kathy.
Is. I love the Nabisco goods. They're delicious.
Yum. All right, we have to take a break.
Jill.
And then we'll talk to Steve Bertrand, America's favorite friend. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Do you want me to put you in, Coach?
Yeah, put me in, Coach. Put us in. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's our second show of the day. Hope you like the first one. Hope you like this one. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200.
Yes, our double header today. Can we begin with something that I found in the Red Eye?
Sure. What is it?
Favorite baseball movies from the ones who make a living at it.
From actual baseball players?
Yes.
Yeah? What
Isn't
are they like?
Kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
This is written by Scott King in the Red Eye. While Chicago baseball fans continue the timeless Sox-Cubs feud this summer, clearly the Cubs have the upper hand right now.
Oh, it says.
Yep.
It says in the Red Eye.
There's one thing we can all agree on. There are some awesome baseball movies. White Sox players recently revealed their favorite to Red Eye. So these are just Sox players.
All right, that's fine.
Todd Frazier, third baseman.
What is he like?
There's so many good ones, says Todd Frazier. One that I really enjoy is Mr. Baseball.
All right, that's fine.
Tom Selleck, actor Dennis Haysbert, Pedro Serrano.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. It shows a little of another league in baseball, another country. It's set in Japan. The way they do things, I imagine that's me out there. Just don't know what to do. And finally figuring it out, enjoying the country. It's a great movie.
Here's what's strange, and I can't explain this, even though I love movies and I love baseball. I don't know why this is, but the two sports that lend themselves best to movies are baseball and boxing. There have been a couple of good football movies, not a whole lot. There have been a couple
Ryan
of good.
Song.
That's one of them. That's
is
without
that
a doubt one
longest
of them.
Longest Yard.
Longest Yard is up there. There have been a couple that are all right.
What about basketball?
Basketball.
Hoop Dreams.
Hoop Dreams, the documentary,
that
is
was
really
good.
And in hockey, Slapshot is pretty good.
That's pretty awesome.
But there's a bunch of really good baseball movies and boxing movies. I don't know why those are the two sports that seem to have pulled it off the best.
Well, baseball, I know it's because that just love of the game and the father and son or father and daughter, that's just something they share. So it tugs on your baseball strings.
That's true, isn't it?
It
that's
is.
Very true.
Tyler Saladino, infielder for the White Sox.
He of the strange mustache. Tyler Saladino has a peculiar mustache. They should make a movie about that.
It's just really
documentary.
Thin.
Yeah, it's pencil thin.
Like, who's the director?
John Waters.
Yes.
I think he's doing it to emulate John Waters. He's a big fan. He wants to look like John Waters.
Well, his favorite movie, as well as Brett Laurie's second baseman for the Sox,
yeah.
They both enjoy The Sandlot. That is a great movie.
Yeah, it's good.
What do you mean?
There's better, but it's The Sandlot's all right.
Well, pitcher for the White Sox, Zach Putnam.
Yeah.
Major League.
Oh, I've seen that.
You're in it.
Yeah, I'm in it.
One and two?
I'm in the first two. Not the third one. Refused to be in it because they didn't ask me. I held by my principles. I said, well, you know what? I'm not going to do your silly movie if I'm not asked to be in your silly movie. And I didn't.
Well, I wanted to bring this up because maybe we should get Zach Putnam on the on the phone sometime because Major League was his favorite movie. So he's watched you in a movie.
He's got good taste, that Zach Putnam.
He said, I watched it last night, actually, probably Bull Durham also. I like Major League because I started my career with the Indians. So I have some appreciation for Cleveland and just the movie in general. I feel like the acting in that is some of the best I've ever seen.
Does he single me out?
Yes.
Does he mention my name?
He does. It's just funny, too. The whole premise of it. The characters, too. Ricky Vaughn. Who's that?
Charlie Sheen played Ricky Vaughn.
Oh, that's
who
he is?
The pitcher with the glasses.
Pedro Serrano.
Yeah.
These are legends among baseball.
Yeah. Yep.
Doesn't mention your name. I'm sorry.
No. I'm sure they had to edit some stuff out to get everybody in. That's all right.
I just think we should get him on because he's seen you in a movie, two of them.
You know what's strange is I've seen over the years a bunch of baseball players when asked this question, when Mitch Williams was the Cubs closer and one of baseball's biggest characters, they said, how did you decide to be so outrageous? And he said, I watched Major League and I liked the way Charlie Sheen was depicted in that movie.
He was great
in
it.
Yeah.
I had never seen that movie till I started working with you. Oh, those many years ago, and it's really funny.
Oh, yeah,
they're really great.
They did a nice job
with
it.
I didn't see three because no one asked me.
Yeah, they were weird by the time it got to three. The guy who wrote it and directed it, David Ward, also did The Sting.
Oh, really?
So he had, and Malegro Bingfield Wars and a couple of other movies. But, he was really good. That was the first movie he ever directed was Major League. He had written a bunch, but he had never directed before.
Well, I thought you were fantastic
Thank
in
you.
It. And,
it's very nice
if
of
you've
you.
Not seen Major League 1 and 2, listeners, go see it. Don't worry about 3.
I would avoid 3 at all costs.
Did you watch it?
I've never seen it.
Is that your boycott?
Yes. And evidently a lot of other people have joined my boycott because it didn't do too well at the box office.
Same stars? Was Charlie Sheen in number 3?
No. Who was in number 3? I think Corbin Burnson is kind of the only...
Holdover?
The only person who they got for 3. I don't think any of the other stars were in number 3.
Well, 1 and 2 are fantastic.
Yeah,
and you can see Bill Leff starring in it.
And my name is in it, too. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
This is the part that
my
parents thought this was cooler than me being in those movies was that the guy I was just telling you about, David Ward, as an inside joke, named one of the characters my name. So at some point,
gives off a double to Billy Love or something like
that. Bob Uecker calls that out. And my parents thought, they saw it the day it opened and they called and they go, your name is in the movie. And I went, I know. And I'm in the movie too. And they go, your name. They say your name. Like they didn't care that I was in it.
I forgot about that. We have to get that audio. We've got a lot of holdovers from our old show we used to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, go see Major League and Zach Putnam, your biggest fan.
He's got a great taste in cinema, that Zach Putnam. We'll take a break, and then we have a lot more show, including Ethan Hawke will be on with us.
Could you be more excited?
He's also been in some movies, I guess. We'll probably do a back and forth about what it's like to be in movies, Ethan Hawke and me.
Can't wait for that.
That'll be great. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, if you know there's one thing I don't like to do is scare you.
You love to scare me.
Now that I think about it, who hit underneath the control board? That was
Friday.
That was days ago. I've grown up a lot since then. I wouldn't do today's version of me would never do that.
Yeah. Tomorrow, maybe.
I would probably do it tomorrow, but not today, not on Tuesday. I don't want to scare you, but I know that you're going to the happiest place on earth, Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida. And there's a report that just came out in the last couple days telling anyone visiting Disney World to be careful because of that Zika virus.
Is it a new ride?
No, it's not a ride.
Who
would go on that ride? No one would go on that ride.
Brave people, Bill.
Mickey Mosquito. Here's what it says. This is on MSN.com, and I'm thinking of you because you're heading there.
MSN.com.
Think twice before you book a trip to the happiest place on earth this summer, according to one expert. Your dream vacation spot will soon be hosting another type of visitor, Zika-carrying mosquitoes.
Do we know this for a fact? I know Zika has made its way into the United States. Am I the only one? I'm a total hypochondriac. Am I the only one who's not afraid of Zika?
I would be, there's certain parts of the globe that I would be very afraid of. Like, for instance, I'm trying to think of the girl's name from NBC, from the Today Show, who did the Olympics 4 years ago. She was scheduled to do the Olympics this time around, and she's pregnant, and she said, she announced today, I'm not going.
I get it. She's pregnant. She shouldn't go.
She should not go.
I mean, they have proven facts about the Zika virus that in the first trimester, it causes that microencephaly or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's terrible.
Yeah.
But if you're not pregnant.
Yeah. So, and you're not.
I hope not.
It's this year's Ebola.
It's this year's Ebola.
That I was afraid of.
You were?
Yeah.
Really?
Seriously.
Every year, the flesh-eating bacteria, there's something every summer.
And somehow it never reaches the epidemic proportions.
It's like
there.
Every Olympiad. If you look at every, if you go back to every Olympics for the past, I don't know, four or five.
In our lifetime.
There's always a crisis.
Right.
You know, the smog in China, it's never going to work. Oh, the economic crisis in Greece, they're never going to finish it.
Right.
The Sochi,
the water
it's not
going to
snow, the water's bad. You know, it's always something, and then...
It's always something.
And then Jim McKay goes on TV or Bob Costas or whomever. And it's like, this is a beautiful Olympiad. Everything seems to work out.
Remember what it was in Lillehammer? It was paper cuts, remember?
Paper cuts
were
real.
People thought, we can't have the Olympics. People will get paper cuts.
Right. And they didn't realize that a Lillehammer was actually a very thin piece of paper.
True.
Excuse me.
That was whimsical music, Steve. What was that?
That was my phone. It says here, I've got to go.
Somebody whimsical is calling Steve.
If we go through these cycles, you know, where it's like it's the same. It's the same different story every year.
It's scare tactics, but who benefits from these scare tactics?
Why do we go to horror movies?
I don't.
Something like that.
Wendy avoids them. She doesn't want to go.
But I'm going to Disney, and I
what?
Be careful.
Oh,
here's what it says: some families. It doesn't say your family, but some should avoid the southern United States for the next few months.
Think of that.
This, according the whole southern region.
Okay, this is the biggest scare tactic I have ever heard.
This sucks. The attendance is down at the Cell because it's on the south side of Chicago.
Good one.
Because
who's saying this?
This is Professor Jimmy Whitworth, Wendy, of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
Well, take a shower since you're so into hygiene and cool yourself down.
All right, you're second guessing Professor Jimmy Whitworth? Really? I wouldn't.
Hey, if anybody's heading to Disney and you're going to cancel because of this goof,
don't say that.
312-981-7200.
I wonder if he has shares of Universal Studios amusement park. I wonder. While Zika virus has not reached Florida, Texas, or Louisiana yet, the rising summer temperatures provide the perfect conditions for the infected insects to spread stateside. Whitworth isn't alone in his predictions either. The primary mosquito that can transmit the Zika virus, and then it says it in Latin, but I don't speak Latin, is found in parts of southeastern United States, specifically Florida, the Gulf Coast areas, and parts of Texas. This according to infectious disease expert Kimran Khan.
Doesn't he do afternoons here?
He does, with Anna DeVlantis. The CDC believes the number of domestic cases will also increase as travelers return to the U.S. from affected areas like the Caribbean and South America. I would tell you, are you going to Epcot Center? Because there's a couple countries at Epcot I would not go to.
Well,
we're
once you're there,
Epcot.
It's such a small world after all, you're going to get...
That's not at Epcot.
Right. What if they show, like, in certain areas of It's a Small World, all there's the dolls no are they're slapping their arms to get the mosquitoes off of it as you're going through?
There's no one at the Honduras exhibit. there's, like, a huge crowd at Japan,
right, nothing
30
in Honduras.
Feet away, listening to the
empty.
Drummers. Right,
all right.
Honduras, nothing.
I may not be afraid of the Zika virus, but you guys are totally making fun of it. The
no, we don't know.
People have gotten lots
we're
of...
Not.
There have been a lot of birth defects
we're
linked to this.
We're just saying... We're trying to determine whether or not this is a scare tactic or not.
Or it's not even a scare. They're not designed to do it. We just scare ourselves sometimes. I mean, you know, of course, Wendy, there have been a lot of people sickened by it, and that's a terrible thing. But the way we're living, it's like we're at risk or you're being threatened by it. And
the shelf life on these is very small. I mean, if you look at it, as Steve pointed out, the last couple of years, there's always a version of this that could wipe out the planet, but it doesn't wipe out the planet.
Well, this is causing a lot of birth
defects. Oh, I know. That's the terrible thing. But to say that Disney World is dangerous, I think, is way, way, way premature. Don't you?
I do, too. And if you're a mosquito, you're not going to go where it's really crowded.
Right.
And seriously, you're going to go to more swampy areas.
Yeah. Jungle Cruise.
Where there's no one to bite? What do you mean?
No, where you can get an unsuspecting victim at Disney.
Don't go on the Jungle Cruise.
What that guy just said... It's not in Texas, Louisiana, or Florida yet. Okay.
Right. So why
don't
panic?
So don't go there. What? What are you talking about? It's not even there.
Cindy, you just came back from Disney World. Did you get bit by a mosquito? Are you worried?
Oh, yeah, tons. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, we go a few times a year, and Disney, I mean, when you walk through the parks, and if you've gone there a few times, you know, you never get bit. They have snakes. They have animals that you don't see that they bring into the parks to take care of the mosquitoes. They spray for them. I've never once been bit. And like I said, we go several times a year. I really wouldn't be worried about it. I mean, Disney takes, like, I mean, come on. They want you to be there. They want you to spend the money. They mm-hmm. take care of all their guests.
I went and said hello to Goofy to get my picture taken with him. He was wearing a flower on his lapel, and he squirted me, and I think it was DEET.
Probably.
So he was protecting me.
Yep.
Exactly. Yep. See? So I really don't think that they're going to mess around with it. And, I mean, I get it. You want to, you know, anybody that's going down south, you want to, you know, give them a heads up. But this is Disney. I mean, they're known for their hospitality, taking care of, you know, all their guests. So I really think that, really think you'll be okay. You don't need to wear, like, a sweater and pants and cover yourself.
I don't like to wear pants in public.
Nope, like Winnie the Pooh. Wendy wears the same thing Winnie the Pooh wears.
Don't bother.
Cindy, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You
thanks,
too.
Cindy.
We're also going to Nashville this summer, too.
Oh, it says not to go
July.
To Nashville.
I would not go to Nashville.
No, that's the one place
but
you do not want
to. You know
go.
Where I get bit the most? And no, that I didn't mean it that way. Stop it.
Well, if you put your pants on.
Jeez, Bertrand. There goes your credibility. God.
He's just cracking himself
the
up.
The joke's on you. Steve didn't have any credibility. Come on.
When did that happen?
That didn't happen.
But where I get bit the most is in my... Shut
can
up.
You say on the radio?
Yes, in my backyard.
Just, oh, that's what you call
oh,
it.
Oh, man.
No. When I'm out gardening and I water at twilight, which is the dumbest time, or at dusk,
right.
Dumbest time, because that's when all the... I have
sure.
About 10 bites on my arm right now, on
that's
my shoulders.
You don't want to go out during dusk?
But I don't get bit when I go to Disney. Or Nashville. You guys just are jerks.
Your backyard
I'm
is
sick
covered.
Of boys. I want no boys. I'm making a clubhouse and you can't come in.
That's fair. All right. We need to take a break for obvious reasons. We might come back. Our number is 312-981-7200 if you want to call and complain. More after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, Lucianne Walkowitz is in studio with us. People probably know her best as the guitarist for Ditch Club. She's also an astrophysicist and does some work over at the Adler Planetarium as an astronomer.
Welcome back, Lucianne.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
You know, we wanted to have you, I can't remember, I think it was last Tech Tuesday, we were talking to Ashley Esqueda from CNET, and there was a story she was going to cover, and I wanted to save it for you because I was blown away by it. The International Space Station has an inflatable room.
Yes, it does. It's called the Bigelow Expandable. Oh, and now I'm going to forget what the A and the M stand for. It's it's called BEAM, and it's basically a room that they attach to the International Space Station and then inflate it over the
like
a bouncy house. Yeah, that's
God,
it.
How old are we?
Astronauts love bouncy houses.
Everybody loves bouncy
sure.
houses. It's scientifically proven.
What do they do in this room, this inflatable room?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny, actually. The reason that this was installed is that they're trying to test having these inflatable habitats because it gives you more bang for your buck, basically. Mm-hmm. If you can launch something that you then inflate, it weighs less and then you get more room.
Oh.
However, this is the first time this has been done, so it's really kind of a test module. And the astronauts aren't living in there, really. They're just sort of going in and doing tests on it. So it's a little bit like if you installed like an addition on your home and
yeah.
your neighbors came over and they're like, oh, that's great. You guys hang out in there all the time. And you're like, we go in there like 6 to 7 times per year.
Right, that's it.
But
that's
wouldn't
all.
You be scared? This is in space, people. And this is the Bigelow Expandable Activity Module.
Thank you.
You can thank Kevin. He looked that up. You're very quick with the Google. Wouldn't you be scared, though? This is space. This is like just an inflatable room. Aren't you going to be scared it's going to pop?
Well, I think that's why they're being very cautious and not having people live in it yet. Obviously, they've tested it a lot on the ground. And, you know, there are a lot of things that are that would seem like they're relatively fragile that, right, you know, you can actually make very strong, like fabrics and stuff like that. So, you know, presumably the material has been tested extensively on the ground before being installed on the International Space Station.
And they send up a patch kit, right? I hope, yes. Small patch kit, right? Okay, good.
It just works with your typical bike tools.
Right. It's easy to fix.
Just
good.
A couple tire irons
That's
under there.
That's good. And, yeah. That's very good. So eventually, what's is the goal eventually, if this works out, to do more of this sort of thing?
Yeah. So yeah. Bigelow is a private aerospace industry company, in the same way that like SpaceX is. SpaceX is a little bit more of like a familiar name at this point. Everybody has watched these like amazing SpaceX launches and mm-hmm. stuff. But Bigelow is another company that is developing equipment and materials for space applications. So you'll see things like this being deployed on the International Space Station, but eventually these are the kinds of things that you might imagine sending to Mars to have like an inflatable habitat that you could live in. Because ultimately, one of the challenging things about going into space is that everything, the weight of everything counts, basically. So the heavier it gets, you know, the more fuel you need, the more expensive it becomes to launch. So
if and the
you,
longer the TSA lines.
Yes. That is really That's true. Space does not have pre-check yet.
You know, you reminded me of something like when you go to Mars, and I know that that's the next step, and we want to see if it's inhabited by whomever. I saw something on Groupon. I told you about this, and it is crazy. You can buy an acre of land on Mars for $5. I know. So you're the person that we need to talk to about this, because how does that work? You're not getting an acre. And what happens when we do make it to Mars and start building inflatable activity modules? What is there going to be, like, property owned by such and such? Isn't that crazy?
I kind of wonder whether Groupon knows that somebody is trying to sell acreage Mars.
Right.
That's what surprised me, because yeah. Groupon keeps track of all these things.
Well, you know, it's a little. It reminds me a little bit of the name of star.
I have
star
one. There's a Wendy Snyder star out there.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Wendy.
I didn't pay for it. You,
okay, well, the whoever
International
bought
star
Wendy
Registry.
A star. Please
You've
cover
wasted
your ears.
Your money, right?
There is no international. Well, there is an International Star Registry. It distributes pieces of paper that tell you that you own a star when you do not.
I know, or, it's framed. You know,
I'm sorry, Wendy. You're
Wendy's been
star
paying
to us.
Property taxes the last couple of years. That's a waste
I know,
of money.
I know, and
too.
They've gone up.
A lot.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yep. Yeah, you cannot buy acreage on Mars at the moment. It is
Isn't
not,
that crazy?
It's not owned by anyone. There are treaties in space that people do not own.
Space treaties?
Yes.
Yeah, there's space treaties.
Wow, you knew that?
Yeah, there's space treaties.
Yeah, there's a whole branch of you know, policy that deals with policy in space.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can't buy. Like
I wasn't
on the moon
going
either,
to.
For example.
Yes.
Yes.
Because there's a man up there who owns all the property, the man on the moon.
Yes. That and a cheese shop.
When we eventually do send people to Mars, now I only know this from movies because it hasn't happened yet, but in movies, when astronauts go to Mars, they put them in some sort of a chamber and they make them sleep through the trip because it's so long. Will people be sleeping for months or even years when they go back and forth to Mars? Is that the only way to do it?
I think people will just be... living,
yeah,
you know, like doing their sort of daily activities in the same way that like people in the International Space Station, when they spend a long time up there, they're doing various experiments and, you know, taking care of the space station itself. And, you know, we don't have any way of like putting people in, you know, controlled coma. Well, I mean, we do occasionally for medical purposes put people in controlled coma.
Right.
Right.
But that's not something that we really can do like in the way that you see it in science fiction movies. And so, you know, the trip to Mars is long, but it's
years,
you know,
right?
Yeah, it's anywhere from, you know, a couple months to a couple of years, depending on
right.
where things are and how fast you're going. Yeah, and traffic.
It's like driving to Indianapolis. Have you ever driven to Indianapolis? It takes forever. It's the same kind of thing,
construction.
Right?
Construction.
Yeah, it's construction.
Well, and, you know, most of the travel is the TSA lines.
Yeah, it always is.
Have you ever had any desire to go to the International Space Station?
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I actually did not grow up wanting to be an astronaut. Now, I think if somebody was like, hey, we got an extra spot, you don't have to go through that pesky astronaut training program and screening process, you can just go tomorrow, I would say yes.
You would
obviously.
Say yes.
But I think like when I was very little was when the Challenger explosion happened.
Yeah.
So I think somewhere that must have like set up a situation in my brain where I was like, you know, I'm fine here. I'll study it for
right.
you.
Right. I get that.
I mean, yeah. there are too many risks. Something could totally happen on your way there, on your way back. There still could be some issues while you're there, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, like, think of how many people you want to spend several years locked in a room with.
No one. I'd like to go by myself, and there better be internet, because I want to play Candy Crush Saga.
Right.
That's all I want to do.
Did we talk to you about that astronaut program where they get twins, and they keep one twin here on Earth, and they send the other twin to space? Do you know about this?
Yeah, the Kelly twins.
Yeah, the Kelly twins.
Yeah,
that's
them. Couple of underachieving brothers, Mark and Scott.
Right.
One of whom got to stay on Earth, one of whom lived for a year in the International Space Station.
Right.
I think we did maybe touch on it a little bit, but yeah, that program is essentially to study how people's physiology does in space.
Yeah.
And what were some of the major differences? Wasn't one a different height than when he came back? Did he lose?
Well, I think they're still studying him. So I don't know that there's any bottom line at the moment. But a typical thing that happens when people go to space is that they develop some at least mild osteoporosis. Because your bone density has to do with how much impact you experience, and human beings are used to being in Earth-like gravity.
Right.
So part of the reason for studying microgravity environments is to study how your body changes. Now, they usually get that back after you've been in Earth gravity for a while, you take calcium supplements, they build back their bone density. But
isn't your body amazing, though?
Yes.
How it can change. I mean, seriously.
I have long said, as a person who studies the physical sciences and not the biological sciences, that biology is amazing and disgusting.
Yeah, at the same time. How about that?
All right, we have Lucianne Walkowitz in the studio. She's an astrophysicist, Adler astronomer, and this is a great question that I don't think we've ever asked you before. Drew is on the line. Drew, you have a question for Lucianne?
Yeah, I guess. Thanks for taking my call. So just know that a lot of good sci-fi movies and TV shows came out in the last year. I would wonder if Lucianne has a favorite movie or TV that she's seen in the sci-fi category.
Oh, that's a good question. I'm actually a terrible person to ask because I don't watch a lot of sci-fi.
You don't?
No. Yeah, no, everybody expects that I'm very, you know, familiar.
You live
with
it. I mean, you kind of do.
A little bit. you know, I actually really liked Interstellar. I know that's a little bit dated at this point, but I liked Interstellar a lot. I also liked Gravity, but I kind of wish that Gravity was a silent movie.
Oh, really?
If it was just, if there was no story in Gravity, I think
the
I would
look
have been
of it
better,
was better.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed Interstellar. That's about as recent a reference as I can muster.
Well, how about a little bit further back? Are you a Contact fan?
Yeah, actually, I love Contact.
That's the Jodie Foster movie?
Yeah, I really love
Contact.
Oh, that
was good.
Yeah. That Jodie Foster's character in that movie is based on a real astronomer, Jill Tarter, who's the head of the SETI Institute until just recently. Jill's a really amazing astronomer herself, so it's really cool to see her sort of brought to life as this fictional character in Contact. And I really adored Contact. I thought it was a great movie. And I love, like, 2001, which is
fantastic.
Yeah, I'm a big Kubrick fan.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you, Drew.
Great question, right. Drew. Take care.
All right. Do you, and I don't, you don't have to answer this because it might make people think differently of you. We asked this to Buzz Aldrin, and he said yes. Do you think we have life out there?
I would say I hope so.
That's a great answer.
Well, you know, there is an entire branch of astronomy now that deals with the search for life in the universe and trying to understand life in the universe called astrobiology. So people who come to astrobiology usually come from all kinds of different backgrounds. They can be geologists or, you know, biologists, chemists, astronomers like myself. And, you know, it is actually a legitimate area of study. That it's something that in the next couple of years, as we get better at not just finding planets around other stars, but actually studying like what their atmospheres are made up of, that we might actually be able to detect life on other planets.
But not like, you know, there's not going to be a Bill Leff that's living on Mars or something.
You don't know that. There
you might be
is.
In amoeba form.
That's fine.
With a baseball cap.
I'm all right with
it's
that.
It's really weird that that little
that
amoeba
would
have a little tiny baseball cap. But it, you don't think there's
adorable.
Human life out there, do you?
Well,
it can't be human because the planets wouldn't allow a human life form. The elements of another planet would be so different, they couldn't be human-like, could they?
Well, that's the thing, actually, is that one of the things that makes astronomy work is that the physics and chemistry of the universe is pretty similar everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, carbon, the periodic table of elements, which I wish people would tell little kids this because I think it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The periodic table of elements is basically an ordered list of how common stuff is in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like hydrogen and helium, which are one and two, most common thing in the universe. And yeah. So that's basically a listing of, you know, how common the building blocks of anything are. So carbon is a very common element. It very like easily makes very complex molecules, which is why we think that it's involved in the chemistry of life here on Earth. And so it happens to be the thing that, you know, is around for us to build life out of if we were to find it elsewhere. However, you know, think about like your ability to communicate with a dolphin.
Right. Like,
dolphins are very intelligent animals.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really have good ways of communicating with other life forms that are here on Earth, but we can see that they're there. You know, obviously we have front row seats to what life is happening on Earth. But we can study like how life affects the atmospheres of other planets and be able to find it there. So whether it would be, you know, exactly like humans, well, most life on planet Earth is not exactly like humans.
Right, right, right. But just the fact that the oxygen content would be different on another planet, that alone would change your nose, your lungs, almost everything about your respiratory system.
But we haven't found every planet. Couldn't there be a planet out there that...
Well, sure, there could be. And there are so many planets now. We generally accept that there's probably billions of planets within our galaxy alone. We haven't found every single one of them, but the numbers that we found so far tell us that percentage-wise, they're probably pretty common. Now, that doesn't mean that they're exactly like this one, but it could be that there's another one out there that is very similar. But again, you know, your point is well taken that, you know, we... evolved in response to our environments and other life forms, even here on Earth, evolve in response to their environments. And so one of the things that astrobiologists do is they study the diversity of life on Earth and why things are the way they are, and all of the places that life can live. And so that's sort of one step that we can make close to home that helps us understand what life might be like elsewhere in space.
We have to take a break. I loved science in high school and junior high and elementary school, and I'm loving it right now because science is cool. It really is. Lucianne Wachowicz, astrophysicist, Adler astronomer, artist, guitarist in Ditch Club, and we will continue. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. These childish texters have to grow up. You know how many Uranus jokes have come over?
Not enough.
I mean, keep them coming.
Keep them coming.
Lucianne Wachowicz in the studio from the Adler Planetarium. She's an astrophysicist. And what's going on? There's a new Adler Sky show.
There is. This is a brand new show called Planet Nine that is about the possible existence of a ninth planet in the very outer reaches of the solar system.
Where would it be located?
Well, that's Uranus.
I'm
sorry, next to Uranus.
All right, that's better. That's better.
So it would be located way, way far out, past Pluto, out in what we call the Kuiper Belt.
No, I meant the Adler Planetarium. Where is that located?
Ethan Hawke has just canceled.
I don't blame him. No, where's Plan 9 from outer space located?
Nine. Planet 9 from outer space. It is from outer space. So that's one of the interesting things, is that there is what we would call circumstantial evidence that there is another planet in the outer portion of the solar system. However, we don't know if it's there because it hasn't been directly detected yet. But it seems like... from looking at other what we call dwarf planets, things that are sort of similar to Pluto, that their orbits are being almost herded by gravity. So they orbit in such a way that indicates that there might be something influencing those orbits that we can't see. And one of the ways that it would be possible for this to happen is if there was a large planet that we had not yet discovered in the outer portions of the solar system. So we worked with the two discoverers of this this possible ninth planet. I guess you can't be a discoverer if it's still not actually discovered.
Yeah.
But the two people who reported this evidence, Mike Brown and Konstantin Batygin, who are both astronomers at the California Institute of Technology. And Mike worked with us to develop this show, and it's it's really fantastic, I think, in part because it's very human. A lot of it is, there are some, you know, narration done by Mike himself, who's known as Pluto Killer on Twitter. He's one of the primary discoverers of many of these outer solar system bodies. And, you know, he narrates the process of why Pluto became a dwarf planet instead of being a planet and what makes us think that this planet 9 might exist. And it's unique in the sense that I feel like when you usually see documentaries about space or you go to other planetaria, what you see is some things that are already known. And this is very much like hot off the presses, you know, scientific discoveries that have been made literally in the past few months.
Uh-huh.
And that it's something that we're still in the process of figuring out. And that's very unusual if you think about it for the topic of a sky show.
Right.
And so I think it's fun in the fact that you're experiencing sort of the cutting edge part of space science that's happening now instead of, you know, like here's a tour of all the things we already know are out there.
Good. Yeah, much more immediate.
It's really fun. Our visualization experts actually worked a lot with Mike and Constantine when they were developing the paper. And frankly, it was a good example of the role of visualization because these cool visuals that, you know, you or any visitor to the planetarium would see were also very helpful and informative for Mike and Constantine in developing their paper. You know, the things that they could see sort of in graphs are much more beautifully realized in the form of making this show. And this came out of a wonderful lecture that Mike gave last year that was funded by the Kathleen Foundation.
Yeah. So, and this is seeable now. If you go to the planetarium, it's showing right now.
It just opened. It's a really nice compliment to we have another exhibit that just recently opened in the past couple of months called What is a Planet? That talks about Pluto's demotion.
Yeah, because it's now, what is it now? It's a
dwarf planet.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yep. People get very worked up about Pluto still. It's very, it's an emotional topic.
Yep. Isn't that politically incorrect? Don't you have to say diminutive planet or a little planet, not a dwarf one?
I think you get to call Pluto whatever you want. But okay. some astronomers are still quite upset that it's not a planet at all anymore.
Geographically challenged? Do we say that? I don't know how you word it.
Maybe gravitationally challenged?
Maybe, all right. That seems acceptable.
Is it the size that keeps it from being a planet? It's too tiny?
So it's not really quite massive enough. There are three criteria that you have to pass to be a planet. You have to be in orbit around the sun. You have to be large enough, so massive enough that your gravity has sort of shaped you into more or less a sphere shape. So, and you have to have done what's called clearing your orbit, which basically means you have to be the gravitational boss of your neighborhood.
Boy, I've done two out of those three. I'm this close to being a planet.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that and a couple bucks buys a latte bill.
Leftopia.
I know. That'd be the name of my planet.
You're welcome. I want some credit.
All right.
I bought some land on it already for $5 an acre.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure to see you. Lucianne Wachowicz, go see Planet 9. It's at the Adler Planetarium now. What's the Adler website?
It's adlerplanetarium.org.
Thank you for stopping by. Always a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Lucianne. Break. Steve with the news and then more show. Ethan Hawke later on, by the way. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Skadoobadop.
Skadoobadop is right, Wendy. Ah. It's Bill F. It's the B-52s. Later on in the show, Ethan Hawke will join us. Are you excited? I'm excited.
Yeah.
Always wanted to talk to Ethan Hawke. He's also an author. You know, he's not just an actor.
He writes
novels. He writes novels. Yeah. And he's coming to Chicago for the Chicago Lit Fest. So we're going to talk to him. And he's going to be, this is interesting. He's not obviously going to be here in studio, but he's taping Jimmy Fallon. So he'll be calling us from Jimmy Fallon's show, from the green room.
That is conscientious.
Yeah.
I mean, would you do that?
Nope.
Wouldn't you just revel in the...
I wouldn't be on the show at all. I would not be on this show. I would not.
Wow. Just go home now,
then. I'm one of the hosts of the show, so that'd be irresponsible. But as a guest, I don't think I would do it. You know, a week ago, you and I were discussing this kid in Japan, Yamato Tanuka, and he had a propensity for throwing rocks at things.
Oh, that kid.
Remember him?
The little rock thrower, as I call him.
The little rock thrower. That's what they call him in Japan, the little rock thrower. And his mom and dad said, we have to figure out a way to make young Yamato stop throwing rocks. So they did what I think any responsible parents would do. They drove him to the middle of a forest inhabited with bears, and they left him there.
They
and
didn't
he was
mean
there for
to.
6 days.
They left him there, and they were kind of checking on him, and then lo and behold, this kid wandered, and then they couldn't find him for 6 days.
Their plan was to just leave him there for 5 minutes. But they dropped him off, and he was in the middle of a forest, and he thought...
Who had the last laugh? That's what I want to know. The kid did.
Yamato Tanuka did.
Who threw the last rock? That's what I want to know.
That's a good question. And now he can't throw rocks anymore. I think he's broken that habit. He won't do it anymore. So now there's been an update. They finally, the press there in Japan, finally got a chance to talk to him about his ordeal. The 7-year-old Japanese boy abandoned in a forest by his parents for being naughty... meant to follow his parents' car, but he was crying so hard.
Oh, this is
that
his
he
take.
Went the wrong way.
He's trying to make him feel guilty now.
I hope they already feel guilty.
They Don't should. You?
They should. They should feel extremely guilty and extremely fortunate because, as I pointed out, this forest was inhabited with bears. This could have had a very, very ugly ending. Feeling that the woods were scary, and that's in quotation marks. And I agree with him. I think if I was a 7-year-old boy in the woods for 6 days, that would be the exact words that I would use. Scary. Yamato Tanuka kept walking along the road even after the sunset, eventually arriving at a military base where he found an unlocked building and he slipped inside. That I have to say, that's very smart of him, because if I was in a similar situation, and I can't tell you how many times my parents dropped me off in the middle of a bear-infested forest for something that I did... You want to stick to the road because you say to yourself, the road is going to end up somewhere.
Or there's going to be a car or somebody.
Right.
There'd be somebody coming by,
right.
You would hope.
Right.
And bears don't like to walk on the roads.
Right. Right. Is that true?
I don't know.
I don't know if that's true. But you wouldn't get, like, a car wouldn't pull up, and then you go, oh, thank goodness, somebody's come to rescue me, and it's a family of bears.
Seriously?
That would be,
hey, boo-boo, jump in.
What an ironic finish to the story that would be.
That would be good.
Oh, finally, after all these days, a car has been kind enough, and then as he gets to the car door, he realizes, and it's a family of bears. When I bring back The Outer Limits, Wendy, that's the first episode, the one I just described
to
you.
I can't wait to see it.
It's coming.
What survival skills on this kid, though?
I know.
I mean, really, find shelter. That's your first thing.
He's a smart kid.
He should be on Kid Survivor with Jeff Probst.
They wouldn't let him on because he was throwing rocks at Jeff Probst during the audition.
Who wouldn't?
I do when it's on in my living room. I toss rocks at him.
You know how many TV spills have been through?
Oh, I can't even count. The massive search for Yamato Tanuka after his parents left him by the side of the road in northern Japan as discipline for throwing stones at cars. Now, they didn't say that in the first part of the story.
They just said he was a rock thrower. Yeah, he throwed them well.
But you shouldn't throw them at anything, cars or anything. You know that. The story kept Japan riveted for nearly a week until his discovery on a Japanese military base. It prompted a flood of social media comment, much of it critical of the parents. Now, I would think that it would be all of it critical of the parents. But as we pointed out the other day when we did this, there was actually a debate in Japan over whether or not this was a good punishment tactic. I can't imagine anyone being on the side of the parents going, that's what you do to a 7-year-old who throws rocks. You find yourself the forest that has the most bears, and you take them there. Who would be on that side of the argument?
I don't know.
I don't get that. The Mainichi Shimbun newspaper, I think I'm saying that right, newspaper? Am I saying that right? Yeah. Reported that he was sobbing so hard that he went off in the wrong direction. Here's what he says. These are Yamato's words. I will not do an impression of him. I've been asked by the Japanese consulate to not do an impression. I walked for about 5 hours, I think, Yamato said. After finding the building, I was so cold, so I went inside to sleep. Wearing a baseball cap and
it
holding...
It is you.
All right, so far this does sound like me. I would stick to the main road, and I do wear a baseball cap many times.
And you get cold.
And
you
I do get cold.
You often have a sweater you leave at your desk.
right. And I have a pile of rocks. I'll throw them at any point. You know me.
All right, I'll be good.
I will throw a rock. Yamato waved at journalists, hoping that they would not take him to a bear-infested forest. This kid is so shy now. Every time anybody comes near me, he's like, are we heading back to the bear-infested forest? No, I'm just saying hello to you. Yamato waved at journalists and well-wishers gathered in front of the hospital on Tuesday, occasionally flashing a goop ta-
Gooptastic?
No.
Sanjay Gupta has a gooptastic something or
I'm
other.
I'm trying to translate this from Japanese, Wendy, and it's not easy. A gap-toothed smile would be the right answer here.
Okay.
Were his parents at this press conference? Because that would be awful.
Well, are you
They're
kidding?
They're the people who did this to him.
They weren't there. You know how embarrassed they'd
be? Would, they should be. They should be very embarrassed. Asked how he was feeling, the boy said, I'm all right. He's something of a minimalist, isn't he?
Well, sure.
I'm not great. I was just in a bear-infested forest for 6 days. I'm not terrible. I was just in a bear-infested forest for 6 days. I'm all right. He added that he was looking for...
Why does this happen every day at 2? After 2?
I am translating from Japanese, Wendy. And it's not easy.
I'm all right. Just the way you said that.
I'm all right.
Well,
that's what he said.
Went, I'm that's, all right.
I found that inspirational.
Yes.
He added that he was looking forward to being anywhere but a bear-infested forest. To getting back
I don't know what's real and what isn't in this story.
I made that part up.
All right.
He's looking forward to getting back to school as his father took his hand and led him to the car. Now, every time my dad even reached for my hand, I'm like, not again.
Would you get in a car with that guy again?
No.
Dad, really? We're really going back to school? Because I'd rather go to school than a bear-infested forest.
Right. If you give me my options, Dad, I will choose the school every time. Even though it's summer vacation, I would rather go there than a bear-infested forest. Yamato's parents first said that he disappeared while they foraged for edible plants. Oh, I didn't know that part. That's not nice.
You know where you find those? The grocery store.
I got those in the grocery store. No, but the parents were lying. They said, you know, where's Yamato? Well, we were foraging for plants. They didn't come right out and say, well, he threw some rocks, so you know us. We took him to the bear-infested forest. But later, police said that they left him by the road to discipline. They left him by the road to discipline him after he threw stones at people and cars. They said when they drove back a few minutes later, the boy had disappeared. Yamato said he stayed in the unlocked building for the next 6 days. See, now, is that a good move or a bad move? Would you, if you were in his shoes, and they
They'd
wouldn't,
be too
they
small.
Would not fit you, first of all. But if you were. Would you stay in this building, this military building, or would you say, like, I'll starve in this building. I have to go out and try to find somebody.
I would stay in the building. Shelter is your first thing.
Oh, that's
you can
true.
Go a ways without eating.
That's
I can't.
True.
I get hungry every, like, 3 hours. But most people could go, you just need some water. And I'm wondering, since it was a military building, was it like...
They had water
like
there.
Lost, you know, where they had the Dharma...
The Dharma Initiative from Lost?
Yeah, they had cans of food and they had bottled water.
Well, he said, Yamato said, first of all, he said, I'm all right. Then he said that he drank water from an outdoor tap there at this building. So they had some sort of a...
So he's set for a while.
Smart kid.
Yeah, you do shelter first. Shelter and water. Those
yep.
are the two most important things.
Yep.
Cry first. That would be me.
I would cry first, second, fourth, fifth, and eighth. That's how they'd find me. There's a little girl crying in the forest.
A trail of tears.
Right.
A little girl, that's right.
I didn't have sunflower seeds, Steve. I had a trail of tears.
We'd have MacGyver of one of you, and then the other one's Little Red Riding Hood.
Right. Although he heard search helicopters flying overhead, he decided to stay where he was safe and await discovery.
Okay, well, that's stupid.
That's according to the... I don't know if it is.
If you hear search helicopters, it's not like people are going to be shooting at you unless it's your mom and dad.
I would think my parents sent them to destroy me.
You just said shelter first.
Right.
Yeah, I know, but if you hear some kind of hubbub, you would run out and like find a sheet off the bed or something and get attention.
Right.
Wouldn't you do that? And then go back into the shelter. Come on, I got it all figured out.
Here's what I would do. Because I'm Yamato.
You'd cry.
I would spell, because he's always got a bunch of rocks with him, I would spell out help really
S-O-S.
Big with rocks. Right.
That's less letters.
Yeah.
It'd be
save
easier.
Our ship. I would put out save our ship. And then helicopters would go, this is a forest with bears. There's no ships. And they would just
Boy,
fly off.
Those bears are talented.
They'd look down and they'd say, we speak Japanese.
Right. We don't know what that means. You'd have to put the characters for SOS.
You know what you do? Here is the tip of the century for me, Wendy Snyder.
What is
this? This is the universal sign for I need help.
What?
Take the rocks and make an arrow pointing to
Brilliant.
The building.
Right.
Seriously.
Brilliant.
Universal.
Yeah.
There's an arrow. What's that arrow pointing to?
There's a kid in there.
I don't know what it is, but let's check it out. Somebody yep. wants us to look in there. Maybe it's a trap. Maybe we shouldn't go.
Right. You know, isn't arrow universal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it?
I think it is.
I don't know. I mean, you think it would be, but...
Yep. Look at street signs universally.
Right.
Curve
right.
ahead. Put a U-turn sign.
Evergreen Park, Forest Park, every park. I know it's got those.
I think that's the answer, though. I really do. All right, we need to take a quick break. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we're talking about the little rock thrower.
Yamato from Japan.
And there was a press conference, and it turns out he found a military shed or some building, and right. he hid in there. Very smart kid.
For 6 days.
Poor yeah. little thing.
And again, I want to reiterate, it was not his parents' intention to leave little Yamato in the forest for 6 days. Their game plan was, he's a rock thrower. We need to teach him a lesson. We'll drop him off for 5 minutes. We'll drive away like we're going to leave him in the forest, but then they'll come back. And they did come back after 5 minutes, but he didn't just stay stationary. He left. He went, well, my parents are gone. I have to do something.
This kid is a rock thrower. You think he's just going to sit there? Of course he wandered.
Right. He's a very active boy.
All right, Mary has a great question. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. Now, back in the day, a wooden spoon was used
yes.
to, you know,
discipline.
And
that's what
and
my mom used
on today.
Right.
It may have been, you know, it may have worked back then. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think this little kid will throw rocks again? That's number one, and number two, when they punish him and put him in the forest, will he wander?
In the future, you mean?
In the future.
Right. I don't. Do you think he'll.
It's very effective.
I'm sure it's effective. It has to be. Do
he's
you think
not
going to
throw rocks again.
I think he's done with rocks. He won't even see a Dwayne Johnson movie.
Right. Rocks of any form. He won't have ice in his drinks. He won't. I mean, right. This guy's done with rocks.
So, all in all.
No rock and roll on the radio.
It taught him a lesson.
Right.
Yep.
It just was a.
Right.
Fearful way of getting there.
Right.
How about say,
you know,
don't throw rocks?
Right. And maybe they tried something like a wooden spoon, stand in a corner, and he didn't listen. So they had to go extreme. And sometimes you got to go extreme.
Should have broke his hands. I'm totally kidding.
I hope so.
Wow.
Wow.
Although I'm telling you, my mom had a pretty good hit with the wooden spoon. She
my
could have
broke
broken.
Wooden spoons. Yeah.
Did your mom's work at Guantanamo Bay for any length of time?
No, but she had 11 kids.
Oh, she did? Yeah.
Yeah.
And she needs a spoon in
we
her
only
utility
had
belt.
Three. What's my mom's excuse? Shame on her. Thank you,
Thanks,
Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
Sure.
He probably
He'll
is
never
not.
Throw. This kid will never throw another rock under any circumstances. Would you, after this, after 6 days in a bear-infested forest, I would learn my lesson. So it's been an effective punishment, but I don't recommend it.
No, and it's still, the punishment should fit the crime or the consequence should fit what you're trying to do. And again,
right.
this really doesn't
right.
correlate to rock throwing, although I
it
guess
should tie in better.
Happy ending is he's not going to throw rocks and he's safe and sound.
Right. They should have dropped him off in Little Rock, Arkansas for 6 days. That fits the crime better.
That's true. That is true.
I know. All right, we need to take a break. Steve has the news, and then Ethan Hawke is going to join us. You know him as an actor, but he's also a writer. We'll find out all about that next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. Right now, in an interesting position, I'll explain why. Ethan Hawke is our scheduled guest, and we are very hopeful that he'll be with us sometime in the next half hour. He is currently taping an episode of Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show. So we were told that he'd be calling, and they're doing a dress rehearsal, and he's in some skit. So at some point when he's available, he'll be on to talk to us from the green room over at Jimmy Fallon Show.
Again, if I was Ethan Hawke, I wouldn't do it.
You would not do this.
It's just too much pressure. You got something going on. He's on the Jimmy Fallon Show. What does he need right. us for? Just because he's going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's Ethan Hawke. People are going to go see him. I say he doesn't call in. I'll be happy if he does.
But wait, so you're betting against our own show.
Yes.
We now have, I don't know if you're even aware of this, Steve knows this, we have a reciprocal agreement now with Jimmy Fallon Show that we talk to guests in his green room, and if Jimmy Fallon wants to talk to Steve Dale or any of our guests, he can
Why,
reach them.
Just noted pet expert Steve Dale?
Yeah. any of our guests are available to Jimmy Fallon.
Lucianne, maybe.
Lucianne Walkowitz, if she's in the green room.
Jim O'Hare from yesterday.
Right.
That would have been good. That would have been a good score for Fallon.
Right, right. So anytime there's a guest that the other show wants.
The irascible Eric Zorn.
Eric Zorn.
Feisty.
On any Monday, he might want to talk to Eric Zorn. We could have him on.
Let's tell
Ryan
Eric.
Ryan Salzwedel.
Tell Eric about the deal.
Yeah.
Tell Eric that we have this deal, but since he wasn't here on Monday, he missed the opportunity.
His chance to be on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
It's done.
All right. He'll be very disappointed. I know Eric Zorn. In the meantime, while we wait for him, some big news. We reported, I want to say 2 or maybe 3 weeks ago, that the Playboy Mansion was on the sale block.
I think this was 2 or 3 months ago. It's been,
was it that long
ago? I think it's been on the block for a while.
Was it really? It's a huge, huge mansion, which is why it's called the Playboy Mansion. And it was the listing price, the original listing price was $200 million. But then there was a codicil in there that is very strange. I've never seen this before in real estate. Even after you buy the Playboy Mansion and you fork over the $200 million, you still have to let Hugh Hefner live there.
On a permanent basis, or like just when he's in the area, he'll pop in for an overnight stay?
They weren't specific on that, but I got the feeling it was kind of up to him. So I don't know, if you're spending any money to buy a property, do you want the previous owner to have the right to just kind of hang out there or live there whenever they want?
He's not going to live that long, to be honest with you. How
old?
Well, how old is he?
90.
Okay, then.
He's 90.
You get the Playboy Mansion. You own it.
Right.
I'm looking at aerial pictures, and there's a basketball court in the backyard with grass growing through it, so he's not exercising either.
Not playing basketball anymore.
But, I mean, the house is so big, you're not going to see him that much.
Yeah, just knowing,
though. It's the Playboy Mansion.
I know.
If you had $200 million, you wouldn't buy it?
When I was a kid, and Steve, you're about the same age as me. When you would see, if you would accidentally come across a Playboy magazine and you'd look inside and you'd see the parties at the Playboy Mansion, you thought to yourself,
someday.
That's the ultimate.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It had the pool with what they called the grotto.
The grotto.
I know the grotto.
And for some reason, women sometimes forgot to put their bathing suits on.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy how that happens.
Very
laundry
forgetful.
Day. They were always there on laundry day.
Yep. So you'd say to yourself, I want to have a party there with all the gang. You know, Elliot Gould would be there and Robert Culp.
Really? They were in your gang?
Shel Silverstein. They were not
Shel
in my gang, but those were
Gene
the guys.
Gene Siskel?
Gene Siskel sometimes. That's who hung out
you
at
know,
the Playboy Mansion.
Can I just
mansion.
Tell you, this is Bill Leff's life. He'd finally make it to a party in the grotto at the Playboy Mansion, and you would talk movies with Gene Siskel.
Well, yeah. What else would you talk about with Gene?
I mean, you'd forget to look around.
Oh, I'd look around.
All right.
And they'd have to remind me, no cameras, sir. But I'm at the grotto. I want to take a photo or two. So guess who bought the Playboy Mansion?
Do we know who it is? Is it a celebrity?
It's not a name
Mark Cuban, I would have guessed.
No, it's not Mark Cuban. It's not a name that I think is recognizable, but he is the owner of a company that you will certainly know. And I don't think you'd associate with Playboy Enterprises. You want to guess, Steve? Do you know?
Don't they make ding-dongs?
Bertrand Wins.
Hostess.
Can just go home now.
The maker of the man who runs.
Can't even say it.
Hostess Brands, Darren Metropolis, makes Twinkies, Ho-Hos, and Ding Dongs, Steve.
Seriously, he's right?
He's absolutely right.
You knew, didn't you?
He's absolutely right.
It was a wild guess.
The Playboy Mansion, home of Playboy Magazine founder Hugh Hefner, is under contract to be sold to his neighbor. This according to the property owner, Playboy Enterprises. Darren Metropolis, principal at the private equity firm of Metropolis & Company. As I said, the owners of Twinkies, Ho-Hos, and Ding Dongs.
Snowballs.
And Snowballs. Plans to buy the 20,000 square foot house in Holmby Hills. It's a Los Angeles neighborhood near Beverly Hills.
You're my Holmby.
That's very nice of you. Thank you. Metropolis has agreed. This is the part that I'm sticky on.
Don't say sticky.
Metropolis has agreed to also not call into our show, and to let Hugh Hefner, age 90, live on the property for the rest of his life.
Well, that could
be. How about that?
10 years, it could be a year. It's Hugh Hefner. I'm sure he's got some stories.
Oh, if anyone on the planet has stories, it's Hugh Hefner.
It's not so bad. Go ask your dad. He's living upstairs.
I would not. Yeah, I would not be. It'd be weird, wouldn't it? It'd be weird.
It would be weird to buy the Playboy Mansion.
That would also be weird. That would also be weird. Metropolis is the son of C. Dean Metropolis, the Greek-born billionaire who owned the hometown that Superman lived in.
Yes.
Who once owned Pabst Brewing Company.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Now, Darren Metropolis bought the house next to the Playboy Mansion from Hefner. That's where you want to live, next to the Playboy Mansion. And you want to get yourself a ladder and a telescope.
Stand in your driveway and say parking here.
Right. I love it.
Right.
Free parking.
Don't spend $200 million. Get the mansion next door. Right.
That's the best one. And you don't have to live with Hefner. That right. You just solved the problem.
Just make another grotto filled today.
Right.
Right.
I got the runoff grotto if anyone's pool, interested.
Backyard pool open.
Right. I'd have a Mr. Turtle pool and some house plants. People be wise to me.
No grotto. We have a shower with a bench.
It's not quite as exciting.
All right, we're on the air, guys. Oh, sorry. Quit daydreaming. Sorry. Let's take a quick break, and hopefully we'll talk to Ethan Hawke on the other side of these.
All right, it's Phil and Wendy, WGN.
And now we go live to Jimmy Fallon's Green Room. Author, actor, Ethan Hawke on the line with us. Hey Ethan. Ethan.
Hey, you guys. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thrilled to.
Thank you for being on the show. I got to be honest with you. You're sitting in Fallon's green room. I'm like, why would Ethan Hawke call us? But you did, and we thank you for that.
Well, yeah, I did this a graphic novel with this artist, Greg Ruth, and we're coming to Chicago this weekend for a book fair, and we're going to, you know, do some events and be there. And so I don't mind calling you at all because I'm grateful for you for getting the word out about this book.
Now, this is called In Day. It's a new graphic novel. It publishes today, and you're going to be the Printers Row Lit Fest is what you're talking about. You can go to printersrowlitfest.org.
Ethan, break down the story for us. What is the book about?
Well, it really chronicles the story of the Apache Wars and follows three main characters, Geronimo and Nate Chiefs, as they were serving under their chief, co-chiefs. And their war with a bunch of cowboys, you know, and it kind of tells that story.
Now, you are no stranger to writing books. Ash Wednesday, a little story that talks about a lot of stress that can happen between a relationship, and then Rules for a Night, which a knight heading to battle writes a note to his kids. These are like deep, sweet, emotional family children stories. These are beautiful.
Well, thanks. You know, I mean, it's one of the great pleasures of my life to, you know, get to do a lot of different things. You know, I started acting when I was 13 and, you know, kind of getting to explore things outside that box has been one of the great pleasures of my life.
Explain the difference to us. You're quite an accomplished actor, Ethan. You already know that. But how does it differ for you to write something as opposed to act in something? How do they differ?
Well, in a lot of ways, they don't differ. You know, I mean, at its absolute essence, you know, they're both just about telling stories.
Sure.
It's just how you tell stories. You know, when you're an actor, you're kind of the tip of the spear. It's all about sharing writing that you love.
Mm-hmm.
You're going in front of camera, or you're going in front of an audience, and you're saying, this passage is beautiful, and this is why, and I'm going to act it out for you and try to show what's so interesting about it. And when you're writing and constructing a story a different way, it's just using a different muscle to achieve the same end.
All right, but you know, all right, so you're actor, author, and singer as well.
Because money don't matter tonight, and it sure didn't matter yesterday.
Is that in honor of Prince's birthday today? How'd you get hooked up with this little video that's going viral right now?
I have no idea. I was doing an interview the day that Prince died, and somebody asked me if I would sing one of his songs. And so, you know, I just this film I did called Born to be Blue was a movie about Chet Baker, and I do a bunch of singing in that movie, and so the interviewer was, I guess, harassing me to... to continue the saga.
A whole great montage that's put together because this is Prince's, what would have been his 58th birthday, and one of your favorite songs, Money Don't Matter Tonight.
Love that song.
Ethan, we know that you're writing and you're acting and you're singing, but James Franco did my taxes. He painted Wendy's house. You got a ways to go before you catch up to him.
You know, I'm never going to catch up. Never. That man doesn't sleep, so you can't beat a guy who doesn't sleep.
Sure.
So you mentioned you were, what, 13? Is that how old you were in Dead Poets Society?
No, the first movie I did was called The Explorers with River Phoenix. And,
oh, that's right.
The second film I did was Dead Poets Society. I was 18 then.
Did you see the sketch that they did on Saturday Night Live to kind of pay tribute to Dead Poets?
Yes, I did. It was pretty funny.
It was pretty great. I mean, that was actually a time where you like screamed at the TV. If you haven't seen it, check it out on YouTube. Very funny, people.
Since we're talking about Dead Poets Society, do me a favor. Just give me a moment about what it was like to work with Robin Williams. Was that a magical experience for you?
Oh, you can imagine being 18 years old in a room like that and having your first real experience of acting with a, you know, which is no exaggeration to say he's a comic genius. And, you know, Robin got me my first agent, and I'll always be indebted to him. You know, I can't overestimate what a powerful or over articulate what a powerful experience that was in my life.
And you know what? He'll always be known as one of the comedic geniuses of our lifetime. But when you look at him in a movie like Dead Poets Society and several others, Good Will Hunting, and I could go on and on and on, it really shows his range was just phenomenal.
Yeah, you know, I also loved him in a movie called The Fisher King.
Yep.
He was brilliant in that movie.
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention Aladdin, for crying out.
Yep.
Who doesn't love that? All right, so Jimmy Fallon, was this a rehearsal, or are you going to be on his show tonight?
Yeah, I'm on his show tonight.
Pretty funny stuff to look forward to.
I'm going
to
hang up the phone with you. I'm going to put on my suit and get nervous.
Do you get nervous when you do one of the shows like that?
Of course.
Do you? Why? What?
I already can't wait for it to be over.
Really? How come? I'm surprised to hear that.
Wouldn't you be nervous if you went on like national TV in front of like 10 billion people?
Yeah, but you're out of your element. Is that why you feel a little uncomfortable with it?
I guess, you know, there's always something awkward. You know, I love this book, Inde, so much, and
yeah.
It's been something Greg Ruth and I have worked on for 6 years, and so I'm really proud to be putting it into the world, and I'm kind of honored to be able to do that. But at the same time, you worry your fly's going to be down, you know, you're going to, you know, trip and, you know, be an idiot or say something inappropriate.
On Jimmy Fallon's show? Are
You'll
you kidding
fine.
Me?
You'll be fine. Ethan, when this is over, when Jimmy Fallon's show is over tonight, and I know you're publicizing the book for a little bit, but I know you have a couple of movies coming out. Do you have more books coming out as well?
No. Right now, you know, it's my oldest daughter is graduating from high school, and everybody's finishing up school. And, you know, besides the release of Inde, that's pretty much my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And congrats to your daughter. This is going to be a little easier because for some reason, when they're out of school, there's a little more time to breathe. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And Inde, yeah. You can check out Ethan Hawke, Ethan and Greg Ruth's new graphic novel. I can't say it, Inde. And here's where you go, Printer's Row Lit Fest. It's happening this Saturday from 2:30 to 3:15 at the Cindy Pritzker Auditorium at the Harold Washington Library Center. What are you going to do this summer with the kids?
I don't know, but you know, we're also doing another event. Where's the other event that I'm doing? At Anderson's, I'm doing later on Saturday.
Oh, excellent!
At 5:30. So anybody wants to come out and meet Greg and I, we're going to be there at Anderson's at 5:30, and that should be a really special event.
Ethan, do us
a favor. What am I doing this summer? I have no idea.
Nothing in particular. I know you just got to work with Denzel Washington again. You guys have a pretty good partnership there on film. Was that exciting to work with him behind the camera again?
Yeah, we did a remake of The Magnificent Seven. And it was the same director as Training Day. So the three of us had a ball riding horses and killing bad guys.
Excellent.
Up there in the desert.
Excellent. Well, do us all a favor. Keep writing good books and keep making good movies. You always put out exceptional work.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on your show.
Absolutely. And you're going to be at the Naperville Andersons Saturday at 5:30, Wentz Concert Hall on the campus of North Central College. So that is...
Ooh.
Both
You're
of
very good. You know where I'm going to be before I do.
I'm a quick Googler.
You should be more afraid of that than proud of that, Ethan. That gets scary.
Is the Wentz Concert Hall, is that a good place? Have you guys been there?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, I think I was told it was going to be a great event, so I hope people come out.
Ethan, mention Wendy and my name. They'll give you $1 off on parking.
Okay.
All right. We'll charge you double. Have fun on Jimmy Fallon. We'll be watching tonight, and we'll see you Saturday at the Printers Row Lit Fest.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ethan. Good luck. It's Ethan Hawke, everybody. Calling from Jimmy Fallon's green room, as many of our guests do.
He is very nervous. He made me nervous.
If you were Ethan Hawke, would anything make you nervous? If I was Ethan Hawke, nothing would make me nervous.
But Jimmy Fallon is just such a big goofball, yeah. And I adore him so yeah. much that whatever happens, Jimmy is going to make himself look goofier,
right. Yeah.
But it's so funny to hear this author, this actor that we've seen all over the place, he's nervous.
Yeah, how about that?
But here, let me give you the deets because I've said everything wrong. The novel, it's a graphic novel. I said it right that time. Ethan Hawke and Greg Ruth, he said 6 years in the making. It's called Inde, a story of the Apache Wars. And he is going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest Saturday from 2:30 to 3:15 at the Harold Washington Library Center. And then a little bit later on that day at 5:30, I don't know if he's going to make it to Naperville in 2 hours.
It's going to be Saturday. It's going to be a close call.
But Saturday also 5:30, Wentz Concert Hall, campus of North Central College. Thanks to Anderson's Bookshops.
Yep. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.